Hey, welcome everybody to the Double Take Podcast. I'm either going to apologize or I'm going to be saying you're welcome for this episode. So if you don't know, I started my first podcast last year. It's called Casual Nonsense. Each episode's a little different. We talk about a bunch of random topics or basically nonsense. So for a few of those episodes, we broke down some movies and we had so much fun talking about it. Just like a kid addicted to sugar, we wanted to do more, right? So we created the Double Take Podcast just so we could focus on movies. And that's where we are now. That's what you're listening to. So instead of re-recording this movie, I'm pulling this episode out of the Casual Nonsense archive. And I wanted to share this on the Double Take Podcast. I'm joined by Terrence and Colin, who have been on the show. Well, Terrence is obviously the co-host, but Colin has joined us on a couple episodes previously. And just two big, huge fans of this movie. But I'll tell you, if you haven't seen the movie Warrior, I'm not sure what you're waiting for. This is a fantastic movie. So stay tuned and you can listen to all our reasons why.
Growing up, we all want to know the toughest kid in the neighborhood was, right? I want to know the toughest man on the planet is. That's what we're going to find out.
Brendan, it's me, Pop.
What are you doing here?
Tommy's back.
Did he say if he wants to see me?
I'm proud of you, Tommy. What you did for that kid in the tank.
What was I supposed to do, let him drown?
Tommy Reardon, you saved my life.
Look, Brendan, the bank has got to go by the new appraisal figures. You're upside down on your mortgage.
How much do you need?
I didn't come here for long, Frank. I was hoping that you would train me.
Are you serious?
Do it!
We agreed that we weren't going to raise our children in a family where their father gets beat up for a living.
Brendan, you're a teacher. You got no business in the ring with those animals.
Actually, I used to be one of those animals. Guess I forgot to put that down on my application.
There's this big tournament. Top 16 middleweights in the world. But when it takes all, I'm going to need a trainer of that much you were good at. I need this.
I got a family to protect. Everything I do is for them.
What's going on up here?
Daddy is now a princess.
Mom needed you. I needed you. You're my big brother. You bailed on me.
I was a 16-year-old kid. What the hell did I know?
You had a choice, okay? You had a choice.
Whatever you say, I can do this.
You got him! This is impossible! The two men fighting for the championship tonight are brothers! Go war!
Are we here to win this fight? Because if we're not, I will throw in the towel.
I'm really excited about today's show. We're doing a great movie. We're doing The Warrior, or I think it's just Warrior. There's no the. So this is from 2011. This is kind of a prelude to another project that we're working on. We'll get into maybe later, but I love movies. I got two gentlemen here with me today that also love movies, and they requested this movie. Actually, I don't want to tell you, they paid me to do this, so they're paying me to be here today.
We
so
also love movies.
But this was definitely in their top five, or probably top two, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, let me introduce, I got Terrence Jordan's here today. Terrence, you know, he's been on a few episodes. We got him in Poker and Jeopardy. We got him with the Rounders Review. And Terrence is going to be my partner in crime for the movie spinoff, as we say. Terrence, what's up, dude?
How's it going, Mark? Good to be back. Third time's a charm.
Third won't be the last, though. That's for sure. Nice. Also today, we have Colin Ryan. So Colin's been on here before as well. He was on the A Comedic Guide to Money.
That's
Colin's book. Right. That's also the name of the show. So Colin, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mark. We had such a good time talking. It was so fun to get to know you that way and talk. So like, and I think in that podcast, at some point we segued into movies. It didn't even have anything to do with the topic.
Yep.
And we were like, so I'm glad to be back because I love talking about movies.
Well, we did. I remember when we were done recording too, like we took that discussion a little further.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, we got to talk about movies. And then, you know, you had sent me a list of like, hey, if you ever do movies, here's my 20 or so. Like you broke them down pretty detailed. You had them by like era, like what you were feeling at the time. You like it, there was a pretty detailed list there, right? So I matched up your list with Terrence's list, and you
found a common word.
And Warrior was the first one. I looked no further. Yeah,
it was a lot of overlap.
Yeah, and as soon as I sent you guys a note, I was like, "Hey, what do you guys think of Warrior?" I don't even think I hit send, and I already had responses. Yes. Like, I'm in. When are we recording?
I think I wrote to you. I was like, "I'm in my car. I'm coming. Let's go."
All right, so Warrior, Terrence, why don't you run us through? Give me the synopsis. Like, well, first off, should we save the spoilers, or it's 2011? It came out, like, if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I'm gonna spoil the crap out of it.
Too bad.
Yeah, yeah. You should probably watch this movie before listening to this podcast.
Yep. Stop here, or question: why in the last 13 years did you not watch?
Yeah. This? Yes. Reevaluate your life choices, and then come back to it.
We can only do what we can do here.
Fantastic. All right, Terrence, give me the overview. What are we looking at?
Okay, so Warrior is a movie about MMA, like UFC, mixed martial arts fighting. It follows a couple of brothers that are estranged and their father, who's also been estranged from them. They are very different people, but they both have a lot of talent in the cage. One of them, played by Joel Edgerton, is on the verge of losing his house. So he's got a lot of financial difficulties. And the other one, played by Tom Hardy, has been away for a long time. You come to find out he was taking care of their mother and she has since passed away. But he's got a lot of demons, a lot of issues, and everything culminates in the two of them getting into this huge winner-take-all tournament. The back half of the movie is just that tournament, them going through, winning their fights, and eventually meeting up in the final. So everything that leads to that. So it's a little bit more than your typical fighter boxing kind of movie. Like, it's got a lot of emotional weight to it. All the family dynamics at play, all the family history they got, we'll get into that. But yeah, I think that's the overview.
Perfect. Awesome. So this movie, you know, I watched it a while back, and once we start talking about it, I watched it a couple more times. So you know, this is what we do. We're rewatching these movies for a reason. They're quality movies that you can watch again. If it's on TV right now, like, I'm leaving it on. It's one of those, you know, I've seen it before. No. I know I've seen it, but that's why I'm watching it. It's great. So I had some emotions going through this, right? Like, you love a good sports movie. You love, like, Rudy, Rocky, those kind of things, right? Colin, what's this movie mean to you? Like, what makes you love this movie?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first time I watched it, I mean, you talk about emotions. I was leveled by this movie. Like, full crying, sobbing. Okay. Like, it just, I mean, it's almost like that's the memory I have of this movie, because it's a very good story. And I kind of like that it's like kind of a dude movie by appearance. You know, it's just like two guys like punching the crap out of each other. But the way that it culminates in the two brothers fighting, there's this physical layer of the fight, but there's this huge unspoken emotional layer of all the time they've lost and having to figure out how to reconnect as who they are now and forgive each other. And it's just like, it's so beautifully done the way the movie does it. And so I always love a good like man cry movie, because I like to imagine like your sort of stereotypical dude on the couch, like drinking a beer, watching this movie and just being like, no, it's dusty in here. My eyes are, it's not, it's allergies. You know?
Start off, you're like, rip his head off, get him. Yeah. And then by the end, you're just a weepy mess.
It's real quiet, you know? And I just love that.
So have you ever seen, did you watch Southpaw with Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
So that movie's similar reaction, right? So I remember when that came out, me and my buddy Hammy, shout out to Hammy, we went and saw that and we had no idea. So we're sitting here at the end of that movie, it does the same thing. It has that like cheerful, like, I'm crying, but I gotta, like, you gotta turn your body, like, oh yeah, no, it's dust in the theater, man. I don't know what's going on in here. But that's the same reaction. And I agree. This one brought that out. Like, I was emotionally charged up for this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. And I think we'll get into it, but that really, to me, is good storytelling. What I'm always missing in a certain type of movie where I'm like, I didn't quite feel it the same way, is like, you don't get to know the characters enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun to watch. It's spectacle. It's enjoying, but you don't have that, like, I'm connected to this character's outcomes. And I think this movie spends so much time setting up these characters in a way where you're like, I want them all to succeed. And I think that is what made the story so effective. Another fun little anecdote is, I've seen it a bunch of times, and a few years ago, my wife came in while I was watching it, Lindsay. And this is always kind of my test, is like, do only I like it, or would somebody else like this? And she came in at the second half, And so she watched the second hour of the movie. Without seeing the beginning. This is sacrilege. What are you doing? But that's Lindsay, too. She's just like, I don't want to waste too much time, so I'm just going to watch the end of this. So she watches the second half of the movie, and she's like, start it. Let's watch the rest. And I was like, what a funny endorsement of this movie. It's kind of a Trojan horse of a movie.
Like, you get the guys in the door, they're like, yeah, UFC, fighting tournament, all that, they're in. But really, at its core, it's a lot more than that. I think that's what elevates it beyond, I don't know about you guys, but if there's a movie about boxing, I'm into it. Like, even the worst boxing movies, I have a good time.
Yeah.
There haven't been as many UFC kind of movies, but any kind of fighting deal. But this one, like you said, Colin, the emotion and the family dynamics at play, like, it just, this is why it's kind of better than pretty much all the rest, I think.
Yeah, it holds up, for sure.
Yeah, I dig this movie a lot. And I like, what's more impressive about this, neither of these actors, by the way, too, like, so this movie takes place in Pittsburgh, right? Mm-hmm. Neither of these actors are American. Edgerton's Australian.
Yep.
And Hardy's from London, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. So they have these, when you listen to interviews, like, they have these accents. So Tom Hardy never got into a fight. Like, this was like, he started at ground zero.
That's shocking.
So when you watch him perform in this movie, I mean, it's unbelievable, you know? So they spent 8 hours a day training for the first, I think it was like 6 or 8 weeks before they even started filming. You know what I mean? And they were talking about like their diet plan and chicken and broccoli. And he's like, this sucks. Like, that, they're eating every day, like every 2 hours, like they're having protein meals or whatever just to get in shape. And I mean, it paid off. The realism of these fights was incredible.
Yeah. Tom Hardy, he's, I don't know all the things he did to prepare for this, but like, his neck muscles have neck muscles in this movie.
I know, so he's such a beast.
It's so crazy, right? He's got these big, like, they're not lats, whatever those muscles are called, you know.
Yeah. He's been such a chameleon, though. I mean, we'll get into his roles. He's played so many different kinds of roles, whether it's British, American, whatever. He's been Bane. He's been in Peaky Blinders. He's been all different things. And
well, this, like, was right, he can before do anything. He played Bane, too.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that was bulking up, probably carried over to it.
Yep.
But he
gained, I think it was like 20 pounds for this movie. You know, he came in, I think, at 160, and he was up to almost 185, I think, when they were filming. Yeah. So,
and if you have a movie like this where the guys are not believable as fighters, like, it's, as a sports fan, if you watch a sports movie and it's like, oh, Tom Cruise can't really throw a football, or this guy can't really swing a golf club or whatever, like, it takes you out of the movie. It's only so good it could be. But these guys in the cage, like, Joel Edgerton is pulling off these crazy submission moves and agile acrobatics and stuff. Tom Hardy is just whooping on people. Like, you feel like they're in there and they're actually taking those punches, taking those hits, body slamming people. Like, it looks real. It looks like real footage, highlights, whatever. Like, it doesn't look like there was anything done in post-production to make it look good.
Yeah.
Or there's no CGI. There's no stunt doubles that you can tell. Like, it looks legit.
Well, the director, Gavin O'Connor, you know, we'll get into what he did, but he also did Miracle. And he was talking about when he was trying to cast for the movie Miracle, he said, well, I'm not going to find actors and then teach them to play hockey. He found hockey players and he taught them how to act. Mm-hmm. Well, in this one, he struggled because most actors don't want to get in the ring and fight. Like, they want to act. They don't want to be physical. So he struggled with that to find the right people for this role. And I mean, he nailed it, obviously. I mean, it came out really good. I love listening to, like, this process of how he got to that point, because you see the movie and you're like, I look at this and I'm thinking Tom Hardy was actually a wrestling champion when he was in high school or whatever. But you wouldn't know that he wasn't, you know?
And I think that's like a serendipitous life thing, because both of those characters were not yet known.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about that, like, I know when we talk financials in a minute, like, this movie didn't do that well. And part of it is because these characters were not well known.
Yeah.
Or the actors, excuse me. They were about to break. But in a way, that's perfect for the story, because you're looking at these guys and there's not a lot of baggage. I'd followed Joel Edgerton before in his Australian films. Tom Hardy didn't really know that much. So you're looking at these guys and you're like, they are Brendan and Tommy. And that's rare that you get to have that, like, pure, almost like child experience of a movie where you're like, well, no, that's really a guy from Pittsburgh who's fighting. You know there's more, but you don't know the background.
I think the decision by O'Connor for this one to go with actors and teach them to fight rather than the other way around, the way he did it for Miracle, was really smart too, because Miracle, it's like a huge ensemble cast. They got the whole Team USA. Nobody gets any, like, huge amount of screen time. But this one, like, there's so many close-ups on their faces as they're fighting, as they're talking face-to-face. Their scenes with Nick Nolte, like, that would be tough to pull off if you didn't have the acting training. So it worked out pretty nicely that those guys obviously were up to the task for training and seeming believable as fighters, but they brought the acting chops already that you needed.
Well, I mean, we talked about the emotional part of it, right? So you don't get that from like an MMA fighter. Like maybe you teach them, maybe you don't, but with an actor, like that's what your job is. When you know, just again, to compare it to Miracle, you got Kurt Russell doing most of doing the acting. He's doing the emotional scenes. He's giving the speeches, and all the players have to do is kind of react. Like you got to give them one or two lines where they say something. Like the goalie in Miracle, I forget his name, Eddie Cahill, I think, right? Like he was awesome in that movie too. But like I said, he's not carrying that movie. Most of this movie is built on the emotion of these two characters that you just, like I said, you want them both to win. Like you know what I mean?
You have two lead characters in a sense.
Yeah,
like you have You have a boxing movie on top of a boxing movie. Like you have a Rocky and another Rocky.
Yeah, it's really unique. Usually you got one hero. He's the underdog. You're rooting for him the whole time. Here there's two. They're so wildly different. Even though they're brothers, they come from different places. They have different feelings and different histories with their father and with each other. And so like, yeah, you are kind of rooting for each. Like Tommy, there's a lot of darkness to Tommy, the character that Tom Hardy plays. But like you still find yourself rooting for him for a lot of reasons. Joel Edgerton is like a little bit more the identifiable underdog hero. He's fighting for his family and everything. But like, it's not black and white. It's not like, oh, I want Joel Edgerton to win and Tom Hardy to lose. It's like I can't think of another movie like that where it's you got two that you're rooting for, but they end up in opposition to each other in the end. So yeah, that really puts this over the top for me thinking back on it.
I agree.
So this movie came out September 9th in 2011. The budget was only about $25 million. Of all the movies in 2011, and there were a lot of good movies out there that year, it was like 137th out of the movies, which, you know, at the time, I mean, in 2011, you had a lot of, I think that started around the era where you saw a lot of sequels starting to come out. You know what I mean? Like that kind of kicked off that whole, hey, we're not original anymore. Let's just get a big star and just keep running back the same IP. So the number one movie in 2011 was Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows Part 1. What's it like? Harry Potter 6 or whatever that is, right? You got Transformers Dark of the Moon, which I think was the second one, second or third. It wasn't the first, right? Twilight, Breaking Dawn, yay. Vampires who, instead of curing cancer, they date high school girls. Okay.
Hold on. What are the vampire movies where the vampires cure cancer? I'd like to see.
There isn't one, right? That's what I mean. Hey, you live eternally. You can't be something useful in the world, you know, but whatever. Pirates of the Caribbean, Stranger Tides. Like,
okay. Right. So you're all franchises.
Yeah.
At this point.
Fast Five. Yeah. Right? Those are just some of the highlights that I put on there. I mean,
and those have those big marketing machines behind them. They Disney and all these things this is almost like the little movie that like kind of went overlooked. Like I think the whole PR marketing aspect of it gets overlooked on how these movies perform.
Yeah.
I mean, not how they're remembered because I think it's gained a huge following over time. But like, yeah, like you were saying, what was it, $25 million budget? And I don't even think it made that in
That's
the box office.
Tiny budget.
No, yeah. It didn't. But the top seven movies in 2011 were all sequels. Just to throw that out there. Just to put you in that frame of mind of where we were. You know what I mean? Because that was the beginning or the middle or whatever of, you know, just kind of rewashing movies, the remakes, the sequels, things like that. Now, granted, like a lot of those movies are good. Like, I'm going to watch them because you like the first one, you watch the second one. Cool. I want to continue that world. If there was a Warrior 2, I'm in. Right.
Yeah.
but, you know, it's an original film, which is awesome. So I think what it probably does is made its money in the DVD aspect of it. You know what I mean? I don't have those numbers in front of me, but the Rotten Tomatoes, 84%. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's how you know, like when the fans are giving it a high score, you know that the fans love it. And if you're a director or an actor, like, yeah, you want your money. Obviously, that's what you're doing it. But you're making a movie that the fans love, then you've done your job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And everybody involved in this movie has had, like you said, Colin, they started out, they weren't super known quantities when they're in this. Mm. But they've all had great careers. Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton, Gavin O'Connor's done a lot of good things. Nick Nolte had already had an amazing career by that point. So, like, I think if they look back on it, they're probably happy they were part of this, even if it wasn't like a huge box office smash. Like this movie's going to live on. So
what do you know about Joel Edgerton? Like, so Colin, you said you followed him a little bit beforehand. Like what was he in before that you liked?
I get into like these weird little genres. Like, lately I'm into New Zealand comedies. Like I'll find
very specific.
Yeah.
And that's like vampires curing cancer.
Speaking of vampires, it's What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, okay.
Like, the
there
movie
you go.
Kicked off this whole fascination with these. Like, so anyway, that's an example. I'll be like, I'll watch one and then I'm like, okay, I want to find more of that.
You go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. And so with Joel Edgerton, it was these like gritty Australian kind of crime movies. And this was a while ago. So I can only remember Animal Kingdom, which then turned into a remade TV show. It turned into a
TV show, yeah, yeah.
But it was a fascinating movie because it was like this crime family slowly falling apart. But these are all your kind of leads, are all these just like criminals being chased by the cops and this crime family, and the mom is terrifying. And he's just a very...
Smurf.
Yeah, Smurf, nice. Yeah, yeah. He's just very like, he's rugged, he's tough.
He played Baz in that, right? Was that the...
Yeah.
Because I watched the TV show, I never saw the movie.
I think the movie is superior in ways. I mean, it's hard to compare because the show was like four seasons. But yeah, great movie. So there's a whole production company there. I think it's called Blue Lizard or something like that, that made all these like gritty Australian movies. So I knew him from that. So that made me smile because he's like playing this guy from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a thing I love. I love when you have a movie of American characters and they're like primarily played by non-Americans. I just always, that just,
I feel like there's a lot of actors that can do that are British or Australian, yeah, or whatever, that are amazing when they're playing an American character. I can't think of a lot of like American actors that are, if they're putting on the British accent, great, you're usually like, yeah, oh, this is not Keanu Reeves doing Shakespeare, is like not what we want from
it
him.
It sinks the movie. Yeah. Right. You're right. Versus the other way around. We go like, oh, oh yeah, that's,
how does that sound? What with, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is true. He was the worst part of that. What was that movie called? But yeah, he was the worst part of that.
So did you like Joel's accent in this? Like,
yeah, I thought he was great. I mean, I thought he... Again, he didn't really seem like an actor. He seemed like a guy in a really tough spot. I think it's interesting, too, like economically. This is a couple of years after the 08 recession. I think you have a story who's primarily driven by financial stakes. And I thought, I don't know how often that comes up in a movie, but probably a lot.
It touches home to those who might be going through that.
Yeah, I mean, he's underwater on his mortgage. He's about to lose his house. He and his wife are working three jobs. I think that's something, that period, you see some movies where there's a strong economic kind of unspoken element to it. And I just think that's interesting on rewatches. It's like, that's why these guys are fighting, is they're fighting for the money,
yeah,
to improve either their life, or Tommy's fighting to help his friends, family. And that drives them into this horrible fight against...
Well, it's relatable, right? That's the thing. Like, you're... potentially be relatable to some of the issues. So.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not your typical thing of, oh, you want to fight to become the champion of the world or anything like that. It's like, this is necessity. Like, you're going to lose your house. You're going to lose your life if you don't fight and win, fight well.
Well, there's a quote in there, which I had for later, from Frank Grillo, who I love. We'll get into him in a moment. But, you know, he says just that. He's like, you knock him out or you don't go home. You know, like, it was something along those lines. And I'm like, it's like, that's the motivation. It's like, you're sitting here and you're like, oh man, like I got chills just thinking about like him saying it.
Because... I've got that down as my favorite line of the movie.
Yeah. Is that
spoiled you?
Yeah. Do you have
that's okay.
Do you have the line?
Yeah. He goes, you don't knock him out, you lose the fight. You understand me? You don't knock him out, you don't have a home. That's before the final round against Koba, the big round. Yeah, me too. I got the goosebumps going.
So, that's what's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, that's what makes this movie great, because at the time of that scene too, like, the music was just right, the emotion, the intensity, like, but we'll get to that in a moment. All right, so Tom Hardy's another one. I think he was in a couple other movies, at least for me, that I knew about. Like, he was even in Black Hawk Down like 10 years prior to this, if you remember that. I mean, but what do you think of Tom Hardy?
Tom Hardy's awesome. Anytime I see him in a movie, I've heard he's a little difficult to work with. I don't know about all that, but as far as the movie going experience, he's just... he can inhabit any role. I've got a list of just movies that I love that he's in. He's in Mad Max Fury Road. He's in Inception, Dark Knight Rises, Dunkirk, The Revenant. He's just always good. Peaky Blinders, I mentioned before, is TV, but he's great in that, even if you couldn't totally understand him at all times.
A lot of Christopher Nolan movies, it seems like. Yeah. He finds a director he liked.
But he's just a great actor. He goes, you can tell he's one of those guys that goes all in on the role and does whatever it takes to like inhabit the character and bring it to life. So, yeah, he's always been one of my favorites.
I think that's doing fans a good service when actors do that too. You know, like I said, they dive right in. This is my character. I mean, like Heath Ledger, you know, obviously that didn't work out too well for him in the long run, but he dived so much into the character for the role of the movie, and you feel it in the movie.
I think that'd be so fun. Like, to get paid to do that would be cool. But yeah, it's like Tom Hardy was like, okay, I need to be a working class American from Pennsylvania, and I also need to be a fighter. Like, yeah, two things that I'm distinctly not.
So he lived the life of a UFC fighter. He just trained 8 hours a day. He watched his diet. He worked out. Like, his life was probably pretty indistinguishable from an actual guy that's training for a UFC tournament. Other than he's learning his lines, too.
That's a cool job if you're just like, hey, we're going to send you on location for a couple months.
Sure.
Like, you won't if you see good your work, family if you unless can get they it. Come with you. Well, yeah, right? Yeah. It's like, we're going to get you in the best shape you've ever been in. You're like, oh, this sounds good. Sounds good, you know? But
you're also going to get the crap kicked out of you throughout this movie. That's
true. You're going to punch in the face a few times, you know? Yeah, but I agree with you. I like him in a lot of movies. I'll be honest, and I'm going to say this publicly. I haven't seen Venom. Either
I saw the first one. It was
big confession. I don't think I have either. Actually.
I want to see Venom. I'm not
first one was all right. It's not going to make. We're not going to do a podcast about it. I'll put it that way. Okay. But yeah, it was a good just turn your brain off kind of movie. Get some popcorn.
Okay. All right. It's on my list to do.
You thought we were going to be like, what?
I was thinking
you just hear microphone slam. I'm out of here.
Why is Carl leaving right now? I don't understand.
No, I've not seen that one either. But I do want to add, like, playing against Nick Nolte would have been like his third challenge. And I think Nick Nolte is so, so good in this movie.
He's incredible.
He's like, incredible.
Arguably the best scenes in the movie, even though the fights are amazing. Mm-hmm. The ending is amazing. Like, Nick Nolte is in like five scenes or so, and every one of them is like he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah.
He lost somehow. I don't understand how that is. I didn't see the movie. I saw Christopher Plummer won for got my notes here. It's somewhere. The Beginners, it's called. But Nick Nolte is just, you can just see, we talk about like inhabiting a character, like just the demons that he's got, all the past that's like not shown to you. It's just communicated through like his face and his emotions, and he's unreal. He's
I don't know if he was acting in this. I think he's really a recovering alcoholic who's trying to like get his kids back.
Yeah, I mean, you would definitely think so. Yeah, he's incredible.
All that gravelly, weathered world beaten down. Like, that's he brings that so perfectly.
I love his voice.
Yeah. And I think it reminds me of one of the scenes I really liked, or lines I really liked. It's not an original quote, but the whole first half of the movie, he's trying so hard to be good. He's sober, he's apologetic, and Tom Hardy's character is just like
a dick,
beating him, like rubbing his past in his face, constantly, and he's just taking the hits. But he's always calm and placid and humble. And then there's one scene where Tommy hires him or asks him to train him, and Nick Nolte's like, "Why didn't you get a different trainer?" And he's like, "I don't know those guys." And Nick Nolte says, "The devil you know is better than the devil you don't." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "What?" And then he says it again, and it's really like, you see the darkness. You see like this guy who used to be, I can only imagine, terrifying, drunk, abusive, horrible person to be around. And you just sort of see him, like, he's holding it in there. Yeah, exactly. And on top of that, like this insane competitive dad whose both sons are fighters. So I think there's these little moments where he tells you a lot without you having to see it. And you think, like, you shudder. Like, what if that was my dad growing up?
I think if you just took the movie on the surface, like if just had like regular old performances, you would really sympathize with Nick Nolte. And you do anyway. Because of how he's, but like the way Tommy treats him, you'd be like, oh, like you're not rooting for Tommy. Because Tommy's just a bad guy to Nick Nolte. But the way they act and communicate, like you can tell Nick Nolte did some bad stuff back in the day. He was a bad dad. He was a bad person.
Yeah.
He put them through a lot. And that's why Tommy's got these demons now, because he had to live through them with his father. So I think in lesser hands, like you would watch those scenes and be like, oh, why are you treating your father so bad? Like what could he have possibly done? Like you would need to see that to really understand. But like Nick Nolte is so incredible in this that like, you get it even without having seen those prior.
I feel like the director did a great job of like, without directly telling you what he did, like you pick it up. Like you said, the first scene, Tommy's on the doorsteps, he comes in and he's like, oh, this place needs a woman's touch. And he goes like, hard to find a woman who could take a punch, huh? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know right away, you're like, oh, like you're coming out throwing heat right away. You know what I mean? Yeah. And Nolte's just like, yeah, I deserve that. You know, yeah. He's trying to get him a
drink. He asks him, he's like, is this one of the 12 steps or did they give a guy like you 24? Yeah, like, yeah. It's like, man, he must have been really bad.
He's just twisting the knife as he's going. Like, he's been saving up 14 years to, like, get back at his dad. And now he's at the point where he can kick his ass if he wanted to or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But, yeah, so Nolte's awesome. I love him in this role. They actually wrote this role for him. Which was awesome. So they had him in mind from the beginning. There wasn't anyone else coming in to play this role.
And I read that the studio didn't want him, but I guess Gavin O'Connor, the director, like insisted on having him. And definitely.
Well, he did have some problems. He had, I think Nolte went through a stretch where he had a couple personal problems.
Yeah.
So I was partially joking about him being a recovering alcoholic or whatever, but I don't care. Like, I'm in here and I'm watching this movie. And all I'm thinking about is when I'm done watching this, I'm going to watch both 48 Hours movies because it's fantastic in those. You know what I mean? Like, that was prime Nick Nolte, but yeah, perfect for this role. I agree. You know, I love him as the dad. And it was believable. I think you were saying that earlier. Like, he's believable as their dad. He's just like, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the wife in this, Jennifer Morrison.
Yeah.
And again, they did the same thing with her. Like, she, like, I guess when they were auditioning for the role, she was like the third person to come in. Can we cancel the rest of the day? Like, we found her, you know, and they, out of respect, they let everyone else, they finished the day, but they were like, well, she's it. You know what I mean? I like her in this role, one, because, I mean, she's hot, right? So she's throwing 100 miles an hour anyway, right? Which is great. Right? So, like, okay. But she, I don't know, do you think she had enough of a, we'll call it like the Adrian type role? Like, was she supposed to be the wet blanket in this situation? Like, how did you feel about, how'd you feel about the wife?
I thought that, and I can't remember her name, but I thought Jennifer Morrison did
Tess.
Yes. Okay, Tess did. The character is so good because, I mean, she's the heart of the movie in a sense because she represents the greatest risk that Brennan is taking, which is if I die or get seriously injured, how am I going to take care of my family anyway? Like, we want you to be safe more than we want you to save our house, right? But she's married to this guy who is so stubborn and so resolute that, like, I'm going to save my house. I'm not declaring bankruptcy. I'm not asking for help. Like, there's a scene where he goes, I'm in the tournament. I'm going. And she goes, I'm really glad I really enjoyed the conversation we just had.
Yeah, like, where we decided on that together.
Yeah, like she's married to a man who's a very good man, but also is, like, incredibly stubborn. And so I thought what she did so well is she fights him, she pushes back against him, but she roots for him to be safe. And so there's a little moment early on where she sees a clip of Koba, the Russian who's going to come fight in the tournament. And it's really, I think it's really effective at telling us who she is and what she cares about, because they show him, like, destroying some people in this, like, highlight reel. And then they kind of pause him as he looks at the camera and he's got the mouth guard in and his eyes are crazy. And he just looks like he's like a human Jaws, you know, he's like, this is the monster.
Yeah.
And there's a really cool moment. I don't know if you guys remember this, but she just kind of gives the screen a look like, this is what my husband is going to go fight.
Yeah.
Like, this represents all the loss I'm trying to avoid. And I think that was so brilliant. Just that little moment where, like, you know what she wants. You know what she's afraid of. And then that, of course, is going to pay off later in the movie.
So. And just like with Nick Nolte, there's some lines with him and to him about his past and what he had done, even though you didn't see that. She's got a line about she can't sit in the back of an ambulance with Brendan again.
Yeah.
Going to the hospital, sitting by the hospital bedside with him after he gets knocked unconscious again. So, like, you know they've gone through this. You know there's been pain and this path that he's taken of being a fighter, and she doesn't want to go through that again, even though – like, they're kind of out of options. They don't, like you said, they're working three jobs. He gets suspended from school without pay, so he's really screwed. At that point, it's like, so, yeah, she pushes on him a little bit. And if she took it farther, like, you get a little bit of that Adrian role where it's, like, she doesn't want to watch him. She doesn't – she, like, puts her foot down or whatever. But, like, that's really her only opposition to him. It's, like, she cares so much about him. She doesn't want him to be hurt. But, like, she understands where he's coming from and what he needs to do, and she supports him. Like, I love the scene where his first fight in Sparta in the tournament, she's at home. She couldn't bear to watch it, but she's just waiting by the phone.
Yeah.
And finally the cell phone goes off, and you just see the message, and it says, I won. And she, like, loses her mind. She got tears in her eyes. She's jumping. She kisses the phone.
Yeah.
Like, she plays it all so perfectly. So, yeah, she was fantastic as his wife in this movie.
I like what you were saying about, like, how he – kind of stubborn or whatever, like, it's a risk versus reward, right? Like, so he's like, well, yeah, I could get hurt, but otherwise I'm going to lose the house. So mm-hmm. in his mind, you know, the juice was worth the squeeze.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, what's life going to be like if we lose the house? Like, it, you got to put it all on the line for that.
I'm a big fan of Frank Grillo. Like, I love his movie. Again, like, he was the perfect cast for this. He's actually a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. So this is right up his alley. He did a show called Kingdom, which is another TV show. And if you haven't checked it out, like, you definitely should. I think it's like 3 or 4 seasons.
I don't know that one. I need
you would enjoy it. Like, the opening scene, like, it takes place in like Venice Beach. And so basically he runs an MMA gym in Venice Beach.
Was this before or after Warrior? Do you know?
This was after. This was 2014 it started. Right. So what you got, this Frank Grillo, you got cleanly shaven Frank Grillo. This is the last I've ever seen that. He always has like his 5 o'clock shadow or whatever, right? But yeah, so the opening scene in Kingdom is awesome because he's going for a jog and some car pulls over a couple of dudes. He must owe them money or something. I forget the premise, but he just lays out 2 or 3 dudes in the street and then just keeps jogging. You know what I mean? And then it's like, then like the opening credits come and I'm like, oh, this show is going to be dope. Right.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't want to turn you off that it has one of the Jonas Brothers in it, but I'll let you know that like he's good in this movie too, the show, mm-hmm. right? And this guy.
And he's usually a tough guy. And like, it's interesting seeing him being the coach. He's not the one in the ring fighting.
He's the coach. But he's the coach in this show too. Like, he owns the gym.
Okay.
He's got a couple good fighters in there that do tournament. Like, it's, check it out. Like, to me, like, this was, he probably got that role because of the role in War. He was so excited to, he got to train 8 hours a day and get paid for it. You know what I mean? So he's in there doing the same thing. So I love Grillo in this. You already talked about his quote at the end of the movie, like, every good sports related movie needs that coach to give you that, you know, that extra kind of oomph at the end. You know what I mean?
It's kind of like the corner man too, right? It's like this, it's a trope, but it's a great trope in these movies. And there, I feel like that is a thing, is there's going to be a speech and the speech is like one line. But I think that's what I like about this movie is it's a formula movie, except for the fact that there's two leading storylines, right? Except for that, you got your corner man, you got your villains, you got your stakes, all of that. And I think it nails those moments like that. Like, Frank's character is so great the whole movie and then just pays off in this like reminder, like, this is why you're here. This is what this is about, and gives him that extra. I also, there's a scene early on where he almost gets destroyed in like the first fight, Brennan's character. And he manages to make it to the end of the round. And Frank's like, excellent, awesome, great. You got him right where you want him.
Yeah, he was a second away from being choked out unconscious.
And I think that's so cool, too, because he's like, his job is to reset the energy, refocus the character. So he's just like, perfect. This all went great, you know? And I think that is so valuable to Brennan's character to have that coach.
I just felt that so believable. Like, when Brennan first comes in and he's like, hey, I want you to train me. He's like, I don't want Tess walking through the door with you two puppies, you know, getting in my face. Like, because he was obviously there when they referenced him being in the hospital before. He's like, I'm not going through that again, and neither should you, whatever. I liked everything about his character. And it's like, I know he's a minor role, but probably one of the more important ones, I think.
He's great. And you see when Tess does show up to the tournament, it kind of gives you the impression that Frank is Frank Grillo, but his character is Frank also.
Yeah.
That Frank engineered that because he's like, there's someone here to see you. And Brendan looks behind him and sees Tess there in the crowd.
See, I think that could have been a distraction. I think that might have been a mistake. In my mind, Brendan's focused. He knows his wife's not coming.
Well, he said, he's like, is this okay with you? Is this okay?
Well, it's too late now. Like, once you see her, you're like, oh, hey, honey. And you're about to fight Koba. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be thinking about, oh, great, now my wife's going to watch me get killed.
I think it could be good, though. Like, it's a reminder, like, this is what you're fighting for. Like,
you
could be close to tapping out or losing, but, like, you can't. You can't give up. You can't stop. You got to push through it.
Yeah. Hey, man, girls are watching. You got to – don't give up. Nice. Yeah, I liked him a lot in this. So the character he was based off of, it's funny, what they added in was, so he listens to Beethoven in here. So the trainer that they had come in and train all them for the 8 hours a day or whatever, he listens to classical music. So that's where they incorporated that into Frank's character. So like, that's why you hear him feel the music, you know, like listen and breathe. But it's all about the Beethoven. He comes out to Beethoven as a, you know, so that's the trainer that was training them, like Tom Hardy and Joel. That's what he was playing in the, and stuff. So
it's another cool element that kind of gives the story like a more of a classic feel, or a grounded old, like there's more here than just a MMA tournament, right? There's some elements that are really,
I thought that was so cool for the contrast between Tommy and Brendan, like Tommy is just like a flying ball of violence. He's just like all punches and kicks and he's on you. And Brendan is, he's listening to Ode to Joy as he comes out. He's all technical with his grappling moves and everything like that. Like this, it's, that's the cool thing about MMA, I guess. It's like there's all kinds of styles you can succeed with, and they're like the two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. A couple of B characters are in here. I love Kevin Dunn. He was the principal. Yeah. We've seen him in a bunch of movies. I thought his character was just the right amount. Like, you know, like you mentioned after the first fight, when Brendan wins the first fight, and you see the, you know, he's watching it. Like, first he's telling the kids, no, we can't, you know, we're not going to support this. And then he turns around and he's watching the fight. Much like when Tess was kissing the phone, excited, he's doing the same thing. He's like, he won. Yep.
And then the next fight, his wife's on the couch watching with him.
Yeah.
Then the next one, he's at the drive-in with the students watching.
The progression.
Yeah, you know he's all in.
And I thought that was cool, too. Like, he delivered just enough of, like, because as I'm watching him watch the first fight, I'm doing the exact same thing as I'm watching this. Even though I knew what happened, I knew that Brendan wins that fight. I'm like, what's going to happen? Like, it was so intense to me. And I'm like, oh, like, come on. Like, everything was just perfect about it. And I just love it. But he did great in that.
Yeah, he had the line that the students came to him. They wanted to, like, rent the auditorium or the gym or whatever to watch it. He's like, so just so I have this straight, you want to rent the auditorium to watch your suspended teacher do the thing he was suspended for.
Yeah, it was a good line. It's a good line. So, directed by Gavin O'Connor, I talked about him a little bit, how he did Miracle. It's not the only movie he's done, but I think, for me personally, Miracle's a fantastic movie, and we'll definitely be adding that to our list of movies to do, because not only is it a true story, or, you know, based on a true story or whatever, it's Kurt Russell, who's fantastic. I have a better appreciation for Gavin as a director after watching this movie, and then I was checking behind the scenes, so you listen to him and you talk to him. And not every director is charismatic, and I forget, there was a director I was listening to, he was on John Bertham's podcast, and he was just a dick, you know what I mean? He was just like, oh, Hollywood's this and this, and you make great movies, but it's like, I don't like you, you know what I mean? So for me, I'm like, I could care less, your movies could be great, and I'll watch the movie, but I don't want to know anything more about you because you're kind of a dick. With Gavin, he's talking about how this movie got started. It was supposed to be in Long Beach. And they said, well, that's going to cost a lot of money. So he had to scout around locations. And he said, as soon as he got to Pittsburgh, like the opening scene is like, you know, the gritty everyman.
It's much like, better fit. That's like more of an underdog blue collar feel than
for sure.
California.
For sure. And
this is only like tangentially related, but there's another story like that. There was going to be a show called It's Always Sunny in LA.
Really?
And they couldn't get the money for it, and it became It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So
sometimes it works out for
another
the best.
Story got moved to Pennsylvania.
Well, Pennsylvania has better. It turned out they have better like tax deductions and things like that. So, you know, the budget was $25 million. So he had no big stars to really push this to like, hey, let's film it in Los Angeles or whatever. Good choices all around because you know.
And his best stuff is all like that kind of blue collar, gritty stuff, like besides Miracle.
What else has he done?
Have you seen The Way Back? It's Ben Affleck, he's a basketball coach a couple years ago. He directed that, it was great.
Alcoholic basketball coach.
Yeah, that was a really good kind of overlooked movie. And he didn't direct it, but I saw he was an executive producer on Mayor of Easttown, the HBO show with Kate Winslet. Okay. And that's in Philadelphia, so that's not so far off. But yeah, that's really good too. So I feel like he really thrives in that like blue collar, like gritty kind of realistic setting.
If you get a chance to listen to some of the behind the scenes stuff, you just see how he talks to the actors and stuff is really cool.
And he had a part in the movie too. He was the guy that put the tournament together.
Yeah, JJ,
the Sparta tournament together.
Yeah. I didn't know that until I rewatched the movie after watching the behind. I watched it again last night.
Same here. I didn't know until after. You
know? Yeah. nice. We know the people that are in it. We know the basic plot of this, right? So the beginning part of this movie is, you know, the stage setting, right? So you got Tommy on the front porch. You don't know Tommy's background. Like he's in Nick Nolte's house, and you see pictures of the two boys, like young boys. You got him in the wrestling outfit. You got trophies hanging around. So you're starting to put the pieces together without them having to say it. It was done so well, I think, because you don't want to know all the facts up front. Like you learn as you go. Like you just hear it going through. But a fun fact, the pictures of Brendan are actually him. They're actually Joel as a kid. So Tom Hardy's said his mom won't give out his kids' pictures. Those aren't actually Tom Hardy in there.
I know I read that when you see the video of him, like in the high school wrestling tournament, it was like some actual high school champion wrestler that was like undefeated through his career or something like that.
Yeah, he said his mom wouldn't release any photos of him or whatever. And like they asked him why. And he's like, good luck. You have to get it from her. Yeah.
Interesting.
You
know what
I
mean?
And I was like, that's cool. Like, he's just, she's keeping, you know, hey, this is for me. Like, you want to be an actor in public.
Yeah, it's got to be tough as a public persona.
That's it, you know.
I just want to commend you on your research, Mark. You just told us the behind-the-scenes information on a passing piece of stock footage in one scene in the movie. So kudos to you, my friend.
Listen, that's what we bring here.
You go deep.
We go deep. You know, I felt like...
So I called Tom Hardy's mom, and I for comment.
We would have recorded this about a week ago, but Mark was living with Tom Hardy at the time, so we couldn't...
He trained to be a fighter for this podcast.
I called Mrs. Hardy, Teresa, by the way. I have no idea. But yeah, I just love the just the character building from the beginning. You know, like, it's just one of those things when you watch enough movies, like, for me, I'm typically happy just with the popcorn movie. Like, I'm good with that. Like, I enjoy the Marvel movies up until phase three. You know, where you could just entertain me, I'm good. I'm not diving too deep in it. But again, this is one of those movies where when you start to pay attention to the character development, like, oh, what's Nolte's problem? Like, why is Tommy such, like, you start to feel for these characters or relate to them. Like I said, if you had a housing problem or whatever, and you're doing these things, I just love everything about that. And I love how they pulled it off. You know,
the pacing is perfect. I like the drip feed of information of their whole backstory and why they are the way they are.
The drip feed. I love it.
Yeah. And they really take their time. I didn't notice this to be like a classic three act movie. It was more like you have, the first hour is like literally just setting, maybe the first 40 minutes is just setting the stakes, getting to know the characters. And then the whole back half is the fight. But I think they take so much time in the beginning to really help you understand them. And then each character pays off throughout the movie in that second half. And I just, that's a geeky thing I think about because I used to write screenplays. This would be my homework, would be like, okay, I want a screenplay where each character, if I just describe their arc on its own, unrelated to the rest of the story, it should be a great payoff arc. And I think that's true with Tess. I think that's true with Nick Nolte. That's true with each of the fighters. That's true with Frank. Like, each character on their own just, like, drives to a perfect payoff.
They landed the plane with everything.
Yeah, totally did. Totally did.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It's a sign of a good screenplay, good director, good value all around it. But there was one when Brendan fights and then he gets suspended, the one thing I thought of, what they could have done, and this might have been more of a comic relief, so when the superintendent comes in, what I had in my mind was what they could have done is you pull the lieutenant or whatever from Beverly Hills Cop 2, you know, the one that just comes in and starts yelling, and he's like, I can't believe, like, he's in the office yelling, like, not at Brendan but at the principal, and then he leaves. Like, that would have been a cool scene, I think, but unnecessary. But That's where my head goes when I'm watching that. Like, he's just this older, stuffy guy.
You wanted a little more of that.
Like, that would have been something, I think, just for, like, uppity, like, unnecessary. Like, I get it, but.
Well, can we talk about that for a second? Because I know one of our things we like to go over is our least favorite scene. And typically, we're going to be talking about movies that we love, so there's not a lot that we don't love within the movie. But the whole thing about Brendan getting suspended for a month without pay while he's underwater on his mortgage, fighting to save his life and his family. He gets suspended a month without pay because he showed up with, like, a black eye. Is it because he's got a black eye? Is it because the student's brother saw him in a strip club parking lot fighting? It's like, is that in his contract? He can't do that. Like, you think maybe a little warning or something could have gone a long way, but instead we're going to just dump this guy. I thought that was a little rough.
Well, they mentioned it later because when the wife says, "Hey, you've been suspended," and they said, "Well, the lawyer says it's unwarranted, so you'll be back working."
Yeah, but it doesn't do him any good.
It's too late
now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The house will be gone by then.
But that's the motivator, right? I think you're right. That might have been a little rushed in that sense, because the other piece of that is the superintendent came down like an hour later. Like, he just showed up for school at, say, 7 in the morning. He's got his class. Before lunch, he's talking to the principal or whatever it is. And next thing you know, the superintendent's there. Like, oh, I heard a rumor you have a teacher who fought. Like, what's the red tape? Like, wouldn't that take a couple weeks? You know, to do some research.
Yeah, I think he just happened to be there that day. I'm not even saying it's a bad scene and, like, that it's poorly written or executed or anything, like, and it's necessary for putting Brendan in this, like, desperation mode of having to get in the tournament. But, like, it's honestly, it's kind of realistic. I guess I'm just more annoyed at, like, this is probably what would really happen.
Yeah,
like,
too real.
The bureaucracy, the superintendent would, like, suspend him sight unseen, just based on this information, like, I guess that just annoys me. It's not really an annoyance with the movie, just that this is human nature. It's the one, people in power.
It is the one section of this that was kind of forced. You know what I mean? So if you're going to nitpick something, like, that's probably a good spot, but necessary for the progression of the movie. Like, we don't need a guy yelling in the corner. We don't need an extra 10 minutes of deliberation.
You're talking about realistic red tape bureaucracy. To talk about the banker, I know we have some feelings about the banker in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, you see Brendan like discussing with his banker, financial advisor, whatever he is.
Mortgage lender. I said banker like I'm from the 1930s. The guy who handles his mortgage.
Colin, you guys can't see this, but Colin is wearing a top hat and a monocle right now. It's like,
the banker.
But Brendan goes to him to try to see what he can do. Like, he's willing to do anything to be able to pay his mortgage. He's upside down on his mortgage. And the banker is just, now I'm saying banker too, but he's not willing to work with him at all.
Yeah.
And Brendan even says a line like, listen, I just took the advice you gave me. He's like, I just gave you the information. You made the decision. And like, pretty much just throws the ball back in Brendan's court. Like, this is your fault. What else could Brendan have done? Like, so he's cool. In a movie that had a lot of people getting punched in the face, he probably could have used one. Yeah.
Now, that would have been a twist.
Yeah.
If the mortgage processor shows up in the Sparta fight. He can send
Tommy
in
afterwards to give him the one punch treatment.
Nice. Well, so with Tommy, too, what I liked was when he starts working out, he's a big mystery character at this point, right? Mm-hmm. He shows up, throws a couple of digs at Nick Nolte. Now he's in the gym working out. And now he gets in that first fight with Mad Dog. I just thought that was awesome. Like, you see it coming right away. He's like, mm-hmm. Well, I'll keep him warm for you.
Calling
like,
no, it a no fight problem. Might be generous. It was over quick.
But what was awesome about it was, like, you just see what Tommy's about. Like, no nonsense, you know, all go, no show, no bullshit. Like, I'm going to get in there, I'm going to drop you. And then he's like.
He really is a mystery man through, like, the whole movie, though. Like, even, like, every fight in the tournament, he knocks the guy out. He immediately leaves.
Yeah.
You find out the whole bit about, like, his Marine tenure, his Marine
bits
service.
Bits and pieces of his background.
Towards the end, Like, he's kind of an unknowable guy through most of it. You get bits and pieces through his interaction with Nick Nolte, mostly. But, like, he's a mystery man. He's not your typical leading man that you know, like, what he's fighting for, like Brendan is. Like you get a little bit and pieces of... He speaks to the widow of his former Marine buddy, and you get a little bit there. But, like, I was going to bring up Tom Hardy. Like, I feel like he's the best at this. Like, he doesn't need a lot of lines. Like, Mad Max Fury Road, he hardly speaks at all, but he's, like, an incredible presence. All his Christopher Nolan movies, he's not, like, the lead. Like, it's usually, like, Leonardo DiCaprio or somebody. Like, he's, like, a secondary character, but, like, he's there. He's, like, such a good presence in it. So, like, even with this, he doesn't say a lot. He doesn't give you a lot of information, but, like... You feel it all. Like, it's very powerful, everything that he's given off.
I didn't put it together before, but he's almost like feral, like primal.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
he does in a lot of movies. Like, he's almost not human. He's very menacing.
Yeah, even in that final fight, he's against his brother. And, like, obviously, they're in the way of each other trying to win this thing and win the cash prize. But, like, after that, I think it was after the first round when Brendan breaks his arm. I know we'll get into that whole fight. But, like, Tom Hardy's just, like, pacing around like a tiger in a cage. Like, he's, like, huffing and panting. And, like, he doesn't want to sit. He doesn't want to wait. Feral is a perfect word for it. He's, like, very animalistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good trend set at the beginning. You see him fight. You see a little bit of Brendan at the, you know, the parking lot strip club. You see what he's capable of. Like, more of a technical fighter. Right. And then where Tommy's more of a, I'm an iron fist. I'm going to come in, I'm going to knock you out, and then I'm going to get some lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really awesome. Set the tone for each character at that point. Like, everything that they've been building up to, they delivered pretty much to the end of Act One. Right. So once that happens and they both decide, okay, you don't have a job, you need to train. You're at the gym. Hey, you got into Sparta. Then you have them training. Like, you have this, you don't need the Rocky type montage.
But you get a good montage.
Yeah,
there's one good montage. Anyway, right? You definitely get one anyway.
And I forgot until I rewatched it, you get four montages at the same time.
The way they did it was cool.
Screens.
Yeah.
And yet that was very effective. And I think that, so you see both characters developing and training and their situation changing as Brendan becomes the guy he was understudy to, gets injured and is now not going to go to Sparta. So you see all that happen in 4 minutes of this montage.
Yeah.
And that was really, I thought, really interesting how they compacted it to make space for the fight.
Yeah. And can we just say, like, the whole one maybe nitpick people might have with this movie is like, how did they get into this tournament? It's a $5 million winner-take-all, 16-man tournament. Brendan is a high school physics teacher. Tommy is a complete unknown that just went viral for knocking Mad Dog out. And I don't know about you guys, I just want to say I don't care. Like,
right.
I love that they get in. Brendan's able to talk his way in with his trainer. Tommy gets in just kind of on the back of that notoriety. But, like, the movie is so much better and so much more than that. Like, I'm not going to get hung up on, like, would they really realistically be invited to participate in this? Like, it did take place in 2011, so UFC wasn't as big then as it is now. Like, if it was now, like, they'd all be named guys. It'll be guys you see on these UFC pay-per-views probably, but, like, that's how you get an underdog story. Like, it might be a little bit unbelievable, but, like, I don't care. It's okay.
Well, to nitpick on that same kind of thought was, I think it's, to answer your question, I think it's because both Frank Grillo and the dude who played Jasper Stillwell in the Marvel movies, whoever owned the other gym.
The Tommy Bones?
Yeah, what was his name? Hernandez.
Tommy's trainer or Tommy's agent you're talking about?
Yeah, the guy that owned that gym, whatever. So I think that the guy running the tournament is probably like, okay,
they've got a lot of pull.
Like, yeah, you give me someone from your gym. So, like, initially Grillo had the other dude who got hurt.
Yeah. Right?
But what's unrealistic about that is that guy already had Mad Dog. Like, Mad Dog and Tommy were training in the same gym. Like,
right.
That's kind of unheard of because, you know, they meet in the ring later again. But it's like, what about when they show up to, like, hit the bag? Like, who's getting ring time? Who's getting coach time? Like, they skipped over that, which...
It is a good potential storyline, though. Like, okay, they have a chance. They didn't meet in the first round. It was the semifinals, I think. They'd each won a couple fights before that. But, like, the possibility of, okay, this guy was, like, the number one contender and he got knocked out by this complete unknown... Now they're going to run it back in an official setting with a lot of money on the line. Like, that was a pretty cool aspect of
totally.
It.
Totally.
Yeah. And Tommy just murdered him.
Did it again.
Well, no nonsense. He didn't give a shit about anything.
Yeah.
He didn't care at all, you know. But I like – so also what goes on in here is you see, like, when Nolte shows up to Brandon's house and he's like – what you learn is like, oh, Tommy's back. Oh, you guys training again? Like – instantly got even more angry than he already was because he's like, well, you ignored me when I was a kid. You took the time to train Tommy and you didn't – train me as a fighter and now you're doing it again, you know what I mean?
So
instantly Brendan's like
Brendan had a line too, like, I thought when Tommy left I'd finally get you all to myself.
And he didn't and then, you know, that was it. So I thought that was pretty cool, you know what I mean? But I did like what you were saying, Colin, the training montage with the different screens, like you see different things happening, like you start getting into it a little bit, like you're revving up as an audience member. I'm like, you're getting revved up for what's going on.
Yeah,
you know. And I thought
every fighting movie, you got to have the montage in the middle. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what kicks it into high gear.
It definitely set up, I think, the beginning half of this to be Tommy as the villain. Like we said, he's not at the end of it. You find out he's not really the villain in this, but you know, even in the final fight, he's got the black shorts. Brendan has the white shorts. Like just the little subtleties that take place in here. So like,
he throws a cheap shot like after the first round. Yeah, he hits and it's like
that's a Clubber Lang move. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Tommy makes it hard to root for him, but you through everything else that's happened in the movie, like you get why he is the way he is. He's gone through some stuff.
Yeah.
Here's
one
of my other favorite lines, which I think supports that Tommy as the villain. Is when the commentator says, "I'll tell you what, you do that to someone on the street, they lock you up and throw away the key." Yeah. Break out the yellow tape, Sam. Tommy's walking away from the cage like he's leaving a crime scene.
It's true, though.
You see it like when Brendan wins a fight, like he shows good sportsmanship. He goes up to the guy that he just tapped out. Tommy knocks the guy out and is out of there. They even mentioned he didn't do any press photos. He didn't attend the press conference. Like Tommy is like the ultimate unknowable mystery man. So
well, he's the heel. He's coming off as the heel the whole time. He's here for the money. He doesn't care about your publicity. He doesn't care about sportsmanship. He's like, I'm going to come in. I'm going to knock out four guys, take the money, and leave.
But then it's interesting that, like, the storyline emerges that he saved these Marines. So, like, he becomes the war hero. But then soon thereafter, you realize, oh, he deserted his own unit. And that's why he was there to save him. So, like we were talking about how it's not black and white before. Like, he's a very nuanced, complicated character that like you can fall on either side of, are you rooting for him? Are you rooting against him? But like the way he plays it, like you gotta at least understand why he is the way he is between his family life, his military service. Like he's even going to be arrested. They say like there's a military arrest going to take place after the final.
Yeah.
They're waiting to arrest him because he deserted. But like, I'm no expert on that. I have no idea what's going to happen, but like he did save all these people. He deserted because his best friend and like his entire battalion, he's the only one that lived due to friendly fire. They all got mowed down by friendly fire. So like it's a little understandable. Like, is he really going to go to like a military prison? Are they going to throw him in Guantanamo because of this? Or like, is there going to be a little bit of understanding?
There's your sequel. It's an in-prison tournament.
Tommy has to fight his way out of Cuba. Yeah.
The winner gets released from prison. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
You fight a corrupt warden. Yeah, exactly. Warden. We can write that one.
Yeah.
Well, see, this one's like, so they talk about that a little bit, right? When it's like, because at first, like, total evil character, right? And then you hear about, oh, you ripped the door off a tank or however they embellished it a little bit, right? You say, okay, he's got a good side to him, but you don't see it. You know, now he's in the, he's playing slots and he's like, you know, hey, we got, you know, we get no use for you. You know, you're out of here or whatever,
to,
right?
To his dad.
To his dad, mm-hmm. right? But then, like, but then he takes another turn, right? So then he goes back up and Nolte starts drinking again.
The next scene, too. Yeah. Like, it's incredible. The casino, he throws the coins in Patty's face, and yeah. then the next scene, Patty's falling off the wagon, and you finally see, like, a more sympathetic side of Tommy. He consoles him
yeah.
and plays like more of the father figure to him.
I'm undecided if I think that was too soon, because I thought it took a 180 on his character. Like not a 180. That's probably the wrong way to describe that. But you go from being asshole, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm going to – you just told your dad you had no use for him, and now it's like he's drinking in the room or whatever, and you start consoling him, which is great for the character building. You want that, you know, because it pays off at the end when the final fight, because you see like, oh, he is human. He does have this in him. It's like in Good Will Hunting when like finally Robin Williams gets through to Matt Damon. Like he's got this hard exterior shell and he finally broke through. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that's what Brendan did at the end of the fight. But that scene was good. Like I'm glad it's in there, but I thought it went kind of quick. I thought it was like
– I think it's not the typical kind of character development we see. Usually it's like, okay, if somebody has more darkness to them, they slowly get brought toward the light and then they have a breakthrough. Tommy is just like he falls off the cliff. Like he's just lashing out. He's attacking his dad for everything his dad put him through in his life. All the stuff he went through in the military. His mom died and nobody else. Brendan wasn't there for him. Patty wasn't there for him. But I think you see in the casino and then the hotel room, how he finally turns and consoles him. It's almost similar to the final fight. Like Tommy hits Brendan with a cheap shot. He's like a feral animal. Like he mm-hmm. doesn't see his brother in front of him. Like he's just lashing out for all, whether real or imagined, injustices that have been perpetrated upon him. But then at the end, like Brendan has him in the headlock and Tommy, like he broke his arm. Tommy didn't tap. He should have and could have tapped.
Yeah.
And Brendan broke his arm because he wouldn't. But then the final one, Brendan's got him in the headlock. And Tommy, I don't think, is going to tap. He'll just let Brendan choke him to death if he has to. But Brendan says, like, it's okay, Tommy. I love you. It's okay. And, like, he finally lets go. Like
that's the breakthrough.
And he says, yeah. I'm sorry, too.
Yeah. What? That's exactly right, Colin. He says, I'm sorry. I love you. And yeah. Tommy is – it's just like the Nick Nolte scene. Like, it's like lash out. And then, like, breakthrough. It's that same thing. It's like he's fighting, he's raging, he's angry, and then like there's the catharsis, the epiphany of it, and like he comes to the other side of it.
Holy crap. I just thought of it this way. The forgiveness with Nick Nolte with his father is like the lower level fight for being able to forgive his brother at the end. Like that's the true yeah. stories about two brothers. But I love the Nick Nolte falling off the wagon scene because you can see in Tommy's eyes after he chases his dad away that he went too far. Like you can see he regrets it. And Nick yeah. Nolte kind of walks away and you see like how frail he is and how beaten down he is. And then when he goes up and sees him drinking and raging and listening to his Moby Dick audiobook and almost like he's in it and he's like screaming at the story and he just looks so broken. And I think that's a huge moment where Tommy, I mean, he literally says, I liked you better when you were drunk. But now he sees him as a drunk. He's not violent anymore. He's just empty,
yeah.
right? And I think he picks him up and he forgives him. And I think that was like, in a sense, that's the end of the Nick Nolte Tommy story, right? Was like, can he forgive him for that?
Yeah, he's not in his corner for the last two fights.
Like, yeah,
I mean, that takes sort of, place that day, so he was.
He's kind of not in the rest of the movie that much.
Yeah,
he's more of like he gives a couple looks, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of feel like that was the piece where, if he's able to forgive his father, now he's able to look at his brother walking out on him and kind of show up for that.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think – so to me, those are my two favorite scenes. Nick Nolte falling off the wagon and his Tommy forgiving him. And then the final scene, which is, again, about forgiveness.
Yeah.
And it's true. That's what got me is like when – because Brendan never says, I'm sorry, to Tommy for walking away. right?
Yeah, for not going with them when him and his mom took off.
He has his reasons, and I think his reasons are fair, but it's interesting. He never, because he's stubborn, right? He doesn't apologize. The very end of the movie, he says, I'm sorry, it's okay. And that's when Tommy taps. And that's when I started going, I started crying.
And that's only the second scene they have together, those guys. Like, they meet on Atlantic City
on the
beach before. And, like, Brendan is trying to get through to him. He's trying to reconcile. But he's not going so far as to say, like, I'm sorry. Like, Brendan doesn't really understand. Yeah. And Tommy's just like, I want nothing to do with you. Like, we may be brothers biologically, but we're not in reality. So, like, he just doesn't want to have anything to do with it. So, totally. I think forgiveness and... That's a big part of this.
And he says, I needed you and you bailed, right? He says that in that first meeting, which I read was they filmed it like a fight. So the two characters on the beach, they approach each other from either side of the screen, and there's like the war drum music, and you know, and it's only a conversation, but it is an argument.
Yeah.
And Brendan says too, he's like, I didn't even know mom was sick. Like I didn't even get to be with her when she died. So like, there's some parts we don't know, like Tommy and the mother moved away, but like Brendan didn't even know she was sick and dying. So like Tommy's angry at Brendan for not being there, but Brendan didn't know he was supposed to be there, like that he was needed. So
you couldn't pick up a phone and call and say, hey, mom's sick, come out to California.
Yeah, there was no communication among them. So
well, I think
that's how they got in that
spot.
Said,
like Brendan was stubborn. Well, Tommy's equally as stubborn.
Oh, yeah.
When he's like, you show me pictures of strangers. Like you had all the information. You had all the data. It helps build up the final scene too. Like it really builds that tension between the two of them.
Yeah.
And like what I didn't know was Kobo was Kurt Angle. I don't know if you ever watched wrestling. I realized that when I watched it the second time, and I'm like, wait a minute. And I looked it up, and I'm like, that is Kurt Angle. Like, holy shit. You know what I mean? Because I didn't think he was that tall. Like, they make him pretty tall in the movie. I thought he was this big, tall Russian. And I'm like, who's this guy? How come this guy's not a fighter in real life? Because he's pretty badass. And Kurt Angle is badass. So it was fitting.
And it's interesting casting, too, because, like, he was, like, the American hero was his whole persona. Right. He's in the red, white, and blue outfit, and here he's like the Russian, like he's basically Ivan Drago from Rocky IV.
Yeah, he has no lines either, which is great.
Yeah, they figured out the perfect move, which is don't have him speak.
Yeah,
there you go. Right. He can be whatever country you want.
Just
him to
have him pound guys to death.
But I thought this movie overall, like, I mean, we got into pretty much every one of those scenes, but the payoff at the end was awesome. You know, I'm with you, Colin. I think at the end was just like that emotional, like you're happy. It's like a happy cry, like a happy, like the chills from some of the lines and stuff. So I love a movie like that where I'm entertained. I mentioned how I love the popcorn movie. So you're entertained with the fight scenes, but then the character building was pretty much spot on. You know what I mean? It was spot on to what you're looking to do. You want to be relatable to these guys.
It's funny because as we were going to do this podcast, I was like, it'd be different to talk about a movie that failed more or that didn't do as good of a job. I feel like there'd be a little more tension in a cool way of like, here's what I would have done differently.
Yeah.
And this is a movie where I had a hard time trying to figure out.
You couldn't find anything wrong.
What you could tinker with.
Yeah.
I will throw out one idea though, which ultimately I decided I wasn't on board with. But someone said that Tommy should have fought Koba, Frank or Brendan should have fought Mad Dog. Like switch it. And the argument was that every time that every time that Brendan fights, he has basically the same fight.
Which is, he's an underdog. He's getting
totally
beat up,
about to lose. And he barely hangs on, and then he wins. And so he has that same fight like two or three times in a row coming to the finale.
Yeah.
But anyway.
That's like the final boss of that kind of fight. Yeah. Like Koba's like Koba, the
sure.
ultimate. Yeah.
But it's funny because then I like went this whole circle in my head, and I was like, but you would have to change all of the emotional setup.
Yeah, I keep it the way it was. I thought it worked. I mean, Tommy and Mad Dog coming back together, like Mad Dog's like, oh, this is a fluke. You threw one lucky punch, whatever.
Yeah, you needed that.
They became rivals at that point, right? Like Mad Dog wanted revenge, didn't get it. And then the wife was scared when she first saw Koba.
Yeah.
So, like, that had to be Brendan.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, I'd watch a Tommy Koba fight for sure.
That's what I think. As like a just missing scene, that would have been cool, like a deleted scene. Like,
yeah.
I just want to see that fight because it's the two toughest, scariest characters in the tournament. I think in a way that makes the argument that it actually was designed really well.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about Gavin O'Connor and just like the directing and the choices he made. Like, there's not a lot of music in this movie, if there's any, until that final scene, like that final fight between Tommy and Brendan. And then that song kicks in. It's called About Today by The National. I actually listened to it on the way coming over here today just to kind of get in the mood. But like, I remember even the first time I saw this movie, I don't know how it's going to end. It wasn't spoiled for me. that song hits and like you're just a mess. Whatever's about to happen is going to ruin me. And it does.
I Shazam that. I did the same thing. And I was like, hey, what song is this?
Yeah.
And yeah. It cool. really hits hard. I think partly because there hadn't really been any music throughout. Like it's just like this realistic grounded story of these two guys. You see all their past and all they're fighting for and everything. But then it's like, we're at the end. We're at the catharsis of it all. And like, we talked about forgiveness. Tommy's forgiven Brendan, and like they kind of need to fight. They're not going to forgive each other unless they fought each other like this. Like this was the only way to get past their problems. One thing I want to ask you guys, I don't know if it was planned that we're going to talk about, but like, what do you think happens after the movie? Like as far as their relationship between each other with their father, Patty, like how does it all go?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up in a little bit because like let's see how you like the ending. Let's circle back to that.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't mean to get ahead of it.
But do you guys watch MMA? Like do you go to a friend's house or get the pay-per-view? You don't watch
MMA? I've gotten the odd pay-per-view here or there. It's probably like four or five of them. I don't get like every one. But yeah, I enjoy it, but I'm not like a super fan or anything.
Okay, yeah. I don't – the same way. Like if it's on, I'm going to watch it, but I don't go out of my way. You know what I mean? I feel like now I want to. Like I'm motivated to watch some more fights, right?
Yeah.
But they had – there's another video with an ex-fighter. And what he does is he looks at a lot of, he was looking at a lot of different movies. Like this was one of them. He did like John Wick, like just to see the realism of the moves. Right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What I enjoyed about it was as a fighter who could do these moves, when he's watching Brendan do them with no MMA fighting experience, like he commended him and the director on like getting him to be authentic. You know, I mean, they're going to dramatize it a little bit. He was talking about like a certain armbar, like the Kimura lock or whatever. What fighters will do is that out of respect for each other, they'll give him a couple seconds to tap, like because it hurts. He's like, on the show, it looks like he's holding it for like 10 seconds. He's like, that would never happen in a fight because that is some painful shit, right? So he's like, you're either going to tap or you're going to break it. You know, and no one wants to break the other fighter's arm because it's just a like a respect for the sport. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if your arm's about to break, like you got to tap out. Like don't let your pride get your arm broken.
Yeah.
You know, so he talks about that a little bit. But very authentic with the moves. I thought that was pretty cool. So there's some other videos they break down.
And I've been really getting, the past couple of years, I've started reading more about stunt teams and stunt performers.
Okay.
And so that, what you're describing, that's got to be credit to the stunt choreographer, the fight choreographer.
Yeah.
His name is JJ Perry. And I looked it up just because I was almost by accident about this movie. That's what you have. You have these people who study different forms of fighting and translating that to a movie, like that's their whole specialty. And he was a stuntman before, and that makes sense to me that somebody signed off on it. I think I would also say it's not really a movie for people who are MMA fans because you don't really learn too much about MMA. Like they don't talk about different styles.
They throw a few terms out.
There's a couple terms, but they don't go
into
it.
This was a movie made for my wife to walk in and go, ooh, this is good.
It's watch, for, show it's me for the everybody. Rest. Anybody can watch it.
Or for me, because I don't watch MMA. Also, there were no like Brazilian fighters, which is like a huge part of MMA and UFC is like the Gracies and all these different traditions. So I think this was, to me, felt like a movie that was real enough in the fights and gripping, but it was all that emotional storytelling overall.
Yeah.
And I think that on that respect, it maybe was stronger than an MMA story because it's all about this family.
All right, well, let's get into a couple, we'll call them categories, if you will. Let's see what you guys think of some stuff here. So, you know, as far as I talk about the location of this movie, you know, it's supposed to be in Long Beach, but end up going to Pittsburgh because of the tax purposes. But I think we already said this, right? Like you guys loved the location. You thought that was the perfect gritty spot. I mean, there's not a lot of other locations like that. Maybe Boston, New York, Chicago, maybe, but maybe not Chicago. I don't think you don't get that East Coast kind of attitude in Chicago.
I mean, it's a classic working class town.
Yeah,
I've been to Pittsburgh. There's a rough edge to it. It's beautiful. There's a loyalty to the culture, but it's also very like it's a town, a working class town. And so I think that was perfect for the story.
Yeah. It's the type of place where you believe his students would all be at the drive-in to watch him cheering him on in the fight.
Yeah. These are kids who watch fights. Yeah. If not, are in fights. Yeah.
We call them Steelers fans around here. I don't know. So, Terrence, you were talking about like where this movie goes. I thought that how this movie ended, you know, like I get it. Like it's probably not important to go beyond that, but I think I would have enjoyed personally 5-10 minutes more at the end. Jokingly, like
of like after the fight, you say
after the fight, like so they walk off and then kind of the credits roll and that's great. But 5-10 minutes of maybe him with his wife, or maybe them at a cookout, or him punching the mortgage guy in the face.
I always struggle with that, because like it would be satisfying to see it. Like, I almost like when they leave it to your imagination. Like for me, I think, like, I'm sure Brendan gave Tommy some of the money to give to his buddy Manny's widow that he had promised if he won. I'm sure Patty is allowed back in their lives to like meet his granddaughter. That scene where he's outside on Brendan's front lawn, and Brendan's got two daughters, and one of whom Patty's never even met.
Yeah.
And like, he's just a mess. He's like, oh, is that her? And she's like, who is that? And it's like, oh, it's just some old man. And like, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. So like, I imagine, like, given the way everything played out, like, I think he would have been welcomed back into their lives in some capacity. They would have given him a second chance.
Yeah. Give me the Dominic Toretto family. I was totally cookout. Corona. You know what I mean? He gets to show up. He's got him on the lap. Like, but you're right. I think the mystery of it is nice, because it leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, and the emotion of that final scene with the song playing and the way the fight plays out and them walking out like arm in arm together, like, I thought it was pretty perfect. I mean, I would like to see more, but like, it's almost like I want to stop myself. Like, no, you know what? That's a perfect ending. Let me just imagine how it is. Maybe the director would have chosen something different than what I got in my mind, so let me just hold on to that. But like, I like the way it ended.
If I'm in a theater watching this, though, I need a few extra minutes for my eyes to dry and the redness to go away.
So. That's the thing people write about, is they're like, I sat through the whole credits because I was like,
I saw that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. What about anything unanswered for you?
It's interesting as you talk about it. I could totally picture that final scene or that extra scene of Patty there and the two brothers there and the granddaughters. And yeah, I mean, I think that would be beautiful. But I think also the story did it so well that I can picture it without having to see it.
Yeah, just like you could picture all the things that happened beforehand.
Yeah,
from the movie, like, you can kind of picture the way it would go.
I guess.
Let me ask you guys, do you think Brendan continued fighting after this? I feel like he's done, like, he did it just out of the necessity of getting the money, saving his house. But like, obviously, like, he's incredible. He won this
tournament. He's now
like, he beat the unbeatable Koba, like,
MMA fighter.
Yeah. So like, I think he's done. I think he goes back to teaching and just living his life and being happy with his family. But I was wondering what you guys thought about that.
I agree with you. I think this was a movie about two main fighters who did not want to be fighting. And so I think that, yeah, I agree with you. I think
he accomplished his objective and like job well done.
I think he takes part of my check and goes to the mortgage broker for investment advice.
I don't think that guy's making that any more commissions.
Yeah. Pays off that house for sure.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So a couple of Easter eggs I was doing, and Colin, you mentioned it earlier, with the Moby Dick on the audiobook.
Yeah.
Like, there's a couple of spots in that. I thought that was kind of cool. And then the other thing, too, I had to look this up, too, was you notice that when Patty first wakes Tommy up and he's got that chart, and they say it. I watch my movies with closed captioned. I started doing that since The Boys, because I can't understand Carl Urban in that. So I like to see these actually.
The Boys.
So, definitely understandable.
So I leave closed caption on when I watch movies, which can be distracting to some. But I love it, because you pick up on things. Like, if you ever watch Game of Thrones, put that on, because you get to see the names of the people that are like what do they say? What are they calling that person?
Yeah.
But anyway, so one of the things he talks about is I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but Theogenes.
Yeah. Theogenes, yeah.
Theogenes. Okay.
Yeah, that was crazy. I actually went down the rabbit hole like reading up on him.
Same. After. Oh, really?
Yeah, like, he's this like mythical unbeaten fighter, and like Tommy, like, that kind of gives you insight into why Tommy like the way Patty pushed him as a kid. He was undefeated. He was chasing Theogenes' record of like 1400 something wins in a row. He even had a poster you saw very briefly of like Theogenes with like a bar up to here and Tommy like chasing him.
Yep.
So, but like, you also get the impression like Tommy must have stopped fighting, because Patty asks him, he's like, did you keep fighting? Did you catch him? Did you break the record? And it's like, you would have known, like, even though he moved away, like, you would have been able to probably find out if he, like, he would have won the Olympics. He would have won the gold medal. He would have been like a known famous fighter with how good he was on the track that he was on.
Mm-hmm.
So like, Tommy probably, once he got away, it's like, that's part of my old life. That's part of my life with my father, who I detest now. So like, he probably gave that up afterwards. So
quit.
Yeah. Just another layer to it.
Yeah. So we talked about some favorite scenes as well. Colin, is there something what did you love the most? If you had to pick one, right? I know that might be tough, but if you had to pick one, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean,
I've got two, Colin, so you pick one. I'll take the other, whichever it is.
Chances are they're all the same.
I'm sure they're going to align.
Pretty much most scenes in the movie I really, really, I really connected with.
Can I ask you to narrow it down a little bit?
Yeah, so that's my answer. That's my answer. I'm going to describe them in real time. So Patty comes home from an AA meeting. And there's no, I think the ending is one of the best endings I've ever personally experienced in a movie where everything pays off so perfectly. And I think a thing I've not seen before or since in a fighting movie maybe was the idea that – this is kind of funny, but the way I remember it is not exactly how it happened. But I'm like, this is the ultimate dude moment where Brennan is punching Tommy while going, I'm sorry, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you. I'm sorry. He's punching him. And I was like, that's the funniest
This is how guys work through our feelings.
Yeah, exactly. It's not exactly how it goes, but that's how I remember it. And I think that idea that – there's this brawl happening, but what's happening in a much bigger way is two estranged brothers who have really been apart almost as long as they were ever together.
Yeah.
You know, they've been separated since they were teens, understanding each other's perspective and recognizing that, like, we are a family and we are that is more important than anything else. And I think the way that that happens is it's really clever, really cleverly put together. So,
okay.
Anything in the last 10, 15 minutes was just
definitely.
So I think that when they're on the beach talking and you realize that Brendan's the older brother, that should have gave away who's going to win that last fight, because Brendan has the big brother advantage, is what I'll call
that's
it.
That's right.
I don't
that's
know
right.
if you guys have an older brother or a younger brother, but you know, I have an older brother, and I don't think it would matter how much I would train. He'd probably still kick my ass.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just the way it is.
I thought that when they started fighting, because it seems like Tommy is such a superior fighter. But I was like, well, they probably fought constantly as kids, so they, like, know each other's moves.
Right, maybe.
So, yeah. So I agree. I think that supports that.
So was that the scene you picked, too?
That's one of them, yeah, one of the two. The final scene, the final fight, but also we spoke a little bit about the casino and the hotel room. Like I like to think of, like, actors, like, that I've seen them in a bunch of movies and they've had these long careers. Like, if you're going to put together, like, a highlight reel of, like, their best stuff, like Nick Nolte, Tom Hardy, the scene in the casino and the hotel, I think, are definitely going to be on their highlight reel. It's just, like, incredible acting, incredible embodiment of the characters and, like, even though, like, Tom Hardy, like, you're not totally sympathizing with him up to that point. Like, he's kind of a dick. Like you feel it after that. It's like, all right, I get it. And, like, he finally came around. He finally consoled his father, like, kind of forgiven him for all the shit he put him through his whole life. So that was my other scene that, like, that's just
– I agree.
All the way.
It's like a tie. Those are both so great. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so for me, it's not – it wasn't so much a scene. Like, I you know, those ones are obviously on the list. I think they're going to be better, but – I like most things that have Frank Grillo in it, I'll be honest. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought he was just enough. So when Brennan first goes in his office and he's trying to get him to convince him that, like, hey, I want to come train with you. And he's just like that sarcastic, like, you serious? Like, what are you going to come after detention? You know what I mean? Yeah. And I just love the attitude he brings, because I feel like that's real. Like, that's a question he'd really ask as well, to be like, seriously, dude, you're a teacher. You know what I mean? Like, you're just over 30 or whatever age he was trying to imply that he was.
Well, Mark, you and I talked during the Rounders podcast of, like, the importance of having these, like, smaller characters that are really, really good. You had, like, John Turturro playing Knish in Rounders. Yeah. Like, that's what makes the movie. Like, you can have these lead performances and they're the flashier parts and they'll get the accolades. But, like, you got Frank Grillo in it. You've got the wife of Brendan. Mm-hmm. Like, all the principal from the school. All those characters, like, really elevated to another level.
Together. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. So that was kind of my thoughts. I think I know your answer to the next one, but I think in some movies you watch, and there's always that spot in the movie where you're like, oh, this is where I'll get up and go to the bathroom. I don't think there's any scenes in here where you want to get up and go to the bathroom. If you're in the theater, be like, oh, I'll just run real quick or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no bathroom break scenes for me in this, but I mean, I don't know if you guys like.
No, the movie's a little, I think it's almost 2 hours, 20 minutes, which I was actually surprised when I put it back on. I've seen it a bunch, but I didn't remember it being quite that long, but like, it moves. Like, there's no point where you're checking your phone. There's no point where you want to go to the bathroom. Like, I'm kind of a purist with all that. Like, if I'm going to movies or I'm putting a movie on, like, I'm going to the bathroom right before I start, because I don't want to miss a line. Like, I go to the movies with my kids, and they got to go to the bathroom constantly, even if we go beforehand. And, like, we're watching, like, Trolls or, like, Haunted Mansion or something, and it annoys me. It's like, God, I'm going to miss this line. I'm going to have to watch it again to find out what happened. So I'm typically not leaving anyway, but in this movie, there's not a chance I'm getting up.
While so when you happening. Took your kids to see Warrior in the theater and they wanted to get out.
They loved it. Like, they really appreciated the technical fighting aspect. Yeah, Henry, my four-year-old, was really all in on the brother dynamic and everything.
We're going to interview them in the behind the scenes of the
podcast. Yeah, they're like, what I remember is I needed to pee the whole time.
Yeah,
right. And I'm kind of torn on this too. Did you like the title? Like, you think Warrior was just a good name for that?
Yeah, it's a little generic, but like I tried to think of other titles it could have been. I know I read that they adapted it in – they made an Indian version of it, and that one was called Brothers, which mm-hmm. I get. But also I like Warrior better than that because like Brothers tells you right there, okay, it's going to come down to the two of them at the end. I think it kind of fast forwards you to where there's not as much suspense to it. Yeah, that probably could have been a better title, but Warrior – I don't know. I kind of like just a one-word title. Like, that's just going to stand the test of time, too.
I agree with you, though. It's a good question. I don't think it's the best title, but I couldn't tell you what would be.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got the movie The Warriors, like the gang, the classic movie.
And then you have the show.
The show Warrior. Like, yeah, if you try to Google it, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I think – and this movie came out in 2011, and we've all seen it a ton of times. Like, you grow attached to it. Like, you can't imagine it any other way at that point. Maybe if we came out of the theater, it's like, was there a better title for that after the first time we saw it? Maybe we'd have some ideas. But now it's like, it's just etched in our mind. Like, this is Warrior. Like, we love this movie, so plus, we wouldn't change it.
Plus, I think it's like packaging. Like, the packaging of this movie does not tell you what you're in for.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's why it wasn't a big hit. And that's why a lot of people don't know it is because
maybe it would have made more money with a different title. That's a good
point.
Like,
it's kind of funny. Like, we're having this whole conversation. We're all basically geeking out about this movie that is not a very well-known cultural touchstone movie. And I think it's, in a way, Warrior is symptomatic of that. Like, the title, the poster, the MMA, like, a lot of people just wrote it off without being curious.
Yeah.
And then you go and you watch it and you're like, I mean, the acting, the story, the story that's being told is so powerful. It really sticks with you.
Yeah, I'm the same as you guys. Like, I thought it was kind of generic. I thought they could have done a better title. But that being said, I don't have a better one to pick for them. So, so we're going to go with it, and that's it.
Sure.
So, you know, we talked about, like, if there was a sequel, we'd watch it. Tommy in a prison, corrupt warden, you know, or stuff. Who knows, right?
But given that it had such a perfect ending, I mean, like we said about Rounders, I'm in for a sequel if they make it. I'm in for a sequel if they make this. This is a perfect ending, so I don't think it's necessary. I did read that there's a TV show that's supposedly in production from the same director, Gavin O'Connor, for Paramount. The last thing I saw from it was like June or July of last year, and I couldn't find anything more recent, so I don't know if it's still in development or what, but it was going to be like a 10-episode – it was called Warriors with an S at the end.
Yeah.
And it was going to follow like four different fighters, similar thing, like kind of seeing their backstory.
Oh, not a spinoff from this, but just
– Right, different characters. Gina Rodriguez and Daniel Cormier, who's like a real UFC fighter, was supposed to – starring it, but I don't know. Hopefully we'll hear something about that soon.
This is the plight, Terrence, of us who read movie news of upcoming possibles. Because I'm thinking about it a bit. All these directors, they make a great movie. They're going to get that question in a random interview. So is there going to be a Warrior TV show? And then they go, yeah, I'm interested in that. And then like 4 years goes by. And
this movie came out in 2011.
When's that going to happen?
Yeah.
I'm the same. I read that interview a couple years ago, and I'm like, okay, I want.
Yeah, it's on my calendar. Whenever it comes out, I will be there.
I'll be there.
I think we agree that the casting for this was awesome. We've already decided, like, we like the no names. We like that. So, but I started looking into what are the actors around 2011 that whether they wanted a big name.
Oh, yeah, like a bigger star.
Maybe? Yeah, so I was just trying to make a list of who was around during that time.
Okay.
And I just kind of blow through these because I don't think any of them work except one. Vin Diesel, maybe. Too big of a star at that point. Mm-hmm. Fast Five came out. He doesn't bring the emotion that we need for this.
You're going for the Tommy part, I assume, for him?
I haven't decided.
Okay.
It's just if they're available and the budget allowed it. Right, but it's a different movie.
He's the principal.
I pictured him as a physics teacher. Yeah, I'm not getting it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if you got Vin Diesel in there, this is probably in L.A. Patty's a dock worker. He's not. You know what I mean? Like, you just have a different.
Yeah,
like a different.
Keep
vibe.
Going. Keep going. So, it's fun to think about.
I was looking at Sam Worthington. He just did Clash of the Titans. Was the year before
Avatar.
He did. I think this was before Avatar, right? When did Avatar come out? Was it?
Well, no. Avatar
wasn't it 2009?
Oh, yeah, it was. Okay, because I moved down to North Carolina in 2010, and I saw that like right before I came.
Okay, so Clash of the Titans came out in 2010. So it was he did a couple movies. He did a Terminator version movie. I think he played like John Connor in a movie. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he pretty good action star. Like not super well known, but like he was getting there. So I thought he'd be able to pull off probably the Brandon role. I think would probably be more his thing. I was looking at Gerald Butler, not really believable as a teacher in my opinion, but you know, probably too big of a star, too actiony. So he might not have pulled it off. So I would still say no on him. If you really wanted to go big, you could probably pull in like Wahlberg.
Well, he did The Fighter, so he had a little bit of similar experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was good in that.
He was he played that humble fighter role. So I don't know if he'd want to play Brandon again because it was a similar character traits in those. You know,
yeah.
The last one I thought would be good was Liv Schreiber. I thought he was around. He did Wolverine in 2009.
How old was he by that point? I feel like he's a little more.
I'm not sure.
Advanced in years, but I don't know. He's good though.
All right, so I think we all agree that I think the characters that they picked in this movie are pretty spot on, right? So there's not a lot of recasting I would do. I didn't get into the minor characters because, I think we agree that the minor characters they have just worked perfectly. Like there's no one in there that I was like, oh, man, you got to get rid of this guy. The only thought was, again, if we go big name, the announcer who's in a lot of movies. Like they couldn't get Joe Rogan to come in. That's
basically who Brian he played.
Callen, yeah.
Yeah, I know him from old school. Like, I always think of him from old school when I see him.
Okay.
But he's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah, like, there's nothing wrong with him. I thought he does great. You know, where was Joe Rogan? Too much money? Like, too busy?
Probably. You know? Probably. Yeah. One other quote that he said that was great, because his commentating was great. He goes, lock up the China because the boys are at it again. And the way that they framed that with the music and the cuts to the fighting, like it was very effective.
So he's commenting on every fight, everything going on. He's got his quotes, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
So when Tommy and Brendan are fighting, the first two rounds, he's not talking. Mm-hmm. Like all you hear is Frank Grillo being like, get out of it. Like he's giving his coaching methods. And I thought that was great because the music had just the right amount of intensity. You hear the coach yelling, like you felt like you're Brandon in this situation and you're listening to the coach, like, you know, oh, you got to shoot him, palms up, or what, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then I think in one of the rounds, you hear him talking a little bit, like he's got to add some commentation to that. But for the most part, he didn't talk much. So if you go back and if you end up watching it again, and I know you will at some point, notice that too, because he talks in all the other fights. And then this one, he doesn't talk as much. That's better.
And as a character, too, he's really setting up the underdog nature of Brendan. Like, he's constantly against Brendan.
He calls him a feeder fish at one point.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
the goldfish in his hand or whatever. Yeah.
And he does have one cool contribution at the very end, right before that fight, is he goes, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the two men fighting for the championship are brothers.
Yep. So cool.
And I think that was kind of a chill moment because you're like, wow. Like,
yeah, we know they're brothers, but even seeing everybody else find out that information. Yeah.
Yep. No, I agree. That was a cool spot there. You know, I thought that the music was well done. We talked a little bit about some of the songs in there, but it brought just enough. And I can only use the word intensity because that's how I felt about it when I was watching it. It was just like, I'm into it. I'm on the edge of the chair. I'm like, this is it. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah. And I love listening to movie soundtracks. And so I have actually listened to that one, and it's not a very well-known composer, but it's a lot of, there's the Beethoven parts, but there's also a lot of drum, like war drums. And I think you were saying earlier, Terrence, like there's never a moment where the movie never dragged for you. And I think part of it was like, there was a lot of tension being introduced by the music throughout.
Kept pushing it
forward.
You don't
really notice it on its own unless you listen to it, but
tension's a good word. Just, I like that.
The battle is happening.
Yeah. And that final song I thought was such an interesting choice because it's just like an acoustic guitar instrumental song. Like you think fight, you're thinking like rock and roll drums, like heavy something, like fighting clash kind of music, and this was like just so like sparse and like just kind of let the scene do the talking. Like I'm getting the goosebumps again.
Yeah.
You can watch it now today, huh? Should we watch it now?
Yeah, let's do it.
We got a screening going on at 7 o'clock tonight. It'll be the Warrior in the Park.
Warrior in the Park. You can bring your kids.
So a few other things I had just for, we talked about like our favorite quotes and lines from this too. I think the Grillo one was awesome. And, you know, we mentioned a couple others, but a few extras that I was just noticing about the movie itself, right? You know, I like how Tommy's character doesn't say much. Like you talked a little bit about, you say just enough to be mysterious where like, I hate you, but I also like you at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that's, that was really well done. I thought of, I don't know if you guys ever watch Friday Night Lights, the TV show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There was, if you, again, go back to the second half of this movie, a lot of kind of gritty camera remind me a lot of the Friday Night Lights scenes. Like when you get to some of those football scenes in there, that's the first thing I thought of, was just like that intensity, that tension that builds up. And I got that from Friday Night Lights. Like that's such a good show with, same thing, the drama, like the character development. I don't think Gavin was involved in that show at all, but I feel like this had the same feel for me. And I love that TV show. I've actually rewatched it twice, I think. This movie to me had that same feel, and that's what I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't the, oh, look, we're watching Avengers and everything's popping out the screen and jumping out. It was like more gritty. I think that's how we
were. That's another one. It's like, it's a football show, but it's about a lot more than football. It's about the family and the friend dynamics and everything.
But they bring just enough good football scenes.
Yeah.
But you're like, it's not just about that, but it's a football show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was really cool. What I was looking for, and I'm going to try, I might even try to design it, Frank's Soul of a Lion shirt. Like, I don't know if that's a real brand. You know what I mean? So I was trying to find that. I was going to recreate it and try to get one here and wear it today. But,
nice.
You know, next time I'm going to try to plan ahead a little better. You know, this is my fault. It's my fault. I'll get three of them next time and we'll.
There we go.
Yeah, those are my biggest pieces that I saw, I think. Is there anything that stood out to you guys that we didn't cover today?
One thing we talked about a little bit beforehand I thought could be fun is, like, what character do you – not necessarily I guess it could be identify with, but, like, what do you think you could be? Like I thought about, like, anytime I watch a movie, like, you want to identify with a character on there, and that's how you empathize with them and connect with the story and everything. Like, I thought that Frank, the trainer, would probably be my best bet. I'm not a fighter. I've never been in a fight. Actually, technically, that's sort of true. I'm 1-0 in my life. In middle school, I got challenged to a fight, and the guy didn't show, so I'm counting that as a win.
1,300 more, and you can...
Yeah, Diogenes is safe. Don't worry.
So that's like by decision?
Yeah.
You're like, I won by default. Just discussed it, and Terrence won.
Yeah, I'll take it. But yeah, I think Frank, the role of the coach, I think is would be a good one for me. Like, I just started... we just finished our first soccer season. My oldest son, Max, is 8, and I'm head coach in his team. For the first time, and that's been a lot of fun. So I think
I'm not a math expert here, but that means that you did not take your kids to see Warrior in the theaters.
My kids did not exist.
Yeah, yeah, I knew my math was wrong. I just I liked the image of it.
Yeah, Max was born in 2015. Eventually, I would definitely like to share this movie with him, but it might be a little too soon for that.
For sure.
Yeah, I appreciate you playing along earlier when I was like, "Oh, your kids in the theater in 2011." No, that's not true.
What about you guys? Who do you identify with? Who do you think?
I think for me, it's Brennan. I think that's just the most identifiable character. And I was thinking it would be interesting to get a female perspective on that question, because it's such a movie populated by men. It's such a, like, male dominated sport, but obviously that's not true. There are tons of female fighters. And so that would be interesting. Like, who does a woman watching the movie identify with? But I think of the characters, Nick Nolte and Tom Hardy are so specific in who they are, and they're more unknown.
It's
removed.
Tough to connect as much with them, even if you understand their story. I don't think a lot of people watch it like, oh yeah, that's me. I see a lot of me in that character.
Yeah,
you wouldn't probably want to, because there's a lot of negatives to
and
it.
And it would. What's the word I'm looking for? Diminish it, wouldn't it? If Tom Hardy was talking to a mortgage lender. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
No, that doesn't.
You don't want to see that.
He's not going in places like that.
Brennan is dealing with the crap of life, and he's the one everybody's betting against who has to push through. And so I think that's the purest kind of hero journey that you relate to.
How would you do in the cage, Colin? You holding your own?
I mean, with all the training, maybe. There you go. But I mean, I don't think I'm even 1-0 in my life. I don't think I've actually had.
I'm not either. So, it's okay. How about you, Mark?
I mean, I think everyone would love to be Brandon, because he's ultimately the hero of this and solves it. But I don't know that I'd have the same type of fortitude that he would have. I mean, you don't know until you're put in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So as sad as it seems, if I had to pick one of these characters, I mean, it'd probably be more the principal, to be honest
with you. There we go. All right.
All right.
It'd be someone who, like, I really want to support you in this, but, you know, here's the principal, his whatever age he is, he's got a job to do. You know what I mean? And that's his priority. But then you see after the fact, he's like, I really do support you. I just, you know, like, there's a line you got to cross at some point.
Kind of constrained, you know, by his boss.
So when you look at what we talked about Brandon earlier, like, hey, is the risk worth the reward? Yeah. Well, the principal goes through that and he chooses no risk. You know what I mean? But he still wants to support any way he can. And you know, it's I don't want to say an undeveloped character, but if I had to choose, realistically, I think that's
good take.
I think that's
I like it. Yeah,
you know I thought I mean? You were going to say you identify with Mad Dog Grimes.
Mad Dog Grimes. Yeah,
that was what I really saw.
Yeah, the tough
for
luck
you.
Loser. You know,
yeah, I mean, yeah, gets knocked out twice in 2 seconds.
So fun fact about him:
his talks real, a lot of trash.
His real name is Eric Apple. Like he's a fighter, and if you look in the scene, he has his shirt off, and it says he's got a tattoo that says Bad Apple.
Yeah,
I thought that's kind of cool. Like I'm sure that's his.
I didn't know that. I did see that there were a lot of real MMA fighters that were in those roles. Like the guy that Brendan beat in the first round, the Midnight, they called him.
Yep,
he was a real fighter. There was a bunch.
What
of
a great nickname too, Midnight.
Yeah,
taking you to Midnight. Yeah, I gotta say, Mad Dog Grimes, that character, then that guy, that's a noble gesture.
Yeah, if you're a real fighter, to be like, listen, we're going to get you killed twice. Yeah. Yeah,
when this is your chosen profession.
Yeah, so that was good. That was
hope
good.
We got paid well for that.
Anyone in this movie, is this anyone's like best performance of their career, would you say?
Up there for Nick Nolte, maybe not for him, but for that old regretful character trying to get it right. I thought that was one of the best versions of that I've ever seen. I mean, I'm sure there are other examples, but off the top of my mind.
Yeah, that's not a lot of actors that are pulling that role off.
Put it
which
this
is
way,
cool, because he was known as such a different type of actor most of his life. He was this tough, younger
leading
guy.
Man. Yeah, now he's this gravelly-voiced, gritty, alcoholic, bad father. Like, yeah, it's not a lot of guys can pull that off when they age a little bit. But I think the best way to put it is the top three guys in this movie, like, I don't think they could have been any better. Like, they were incredible throughout the whole movie. Like, we talked about when Tess showed up to the fight and Brendan looks back, like when Frank tells him, like, I've got a surprise for you, and he looks back. Like, a lot of it is just unspoken. Like, you can kind of just see on his face. He just kind of puts his arms up. He mouths, I love you. And, like you just see all the emotion. There's the part he's, like, trying to – I think it was when he was fighting Koba where he's, like, pulling on his arm. And, like, he's straining, like, 100%. Like, he looks like he's going to burst the blood vessel. Like, he's giving every possible ounce of effort. Like, I thought all those guys just, they couldn't have done any better than they did.
It, All right, so the last thing I had on here is, what do you think has, like, aged the most from this movie? So, 13 years ago, right?
Aged the best?
Just aged in general. You can go either direction you want to go, right? So, the first thing I was thinking was, he's in the casino, they're playing slots with actual quarters, right? You don't see that anymore, right?
Does that not happen anymore? I don't know. I'm not a slots guy.
You know, maybe in the older casinos, but now you just
I do kind of know what you mean because I was in I flew through Vegas recently. I do not play the slots, financial guy. You know, I just can't break myself to it. I just can't get my head around it. But in the airport, it's kind of fun to walk around and they have like slot machines in the airport. They're all, and I was like, I would have done it if you could play quarters, but it's like you got to put in your card.
Yeah, if you get a couple loose ones.
Unknowable transfer exchange rate of money to tokens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe this movie changed it. Like after Warrior came out, they're like, listen, we don't want sons throwing buckets of quarters in their father's faces on the floor. So we're going to go to the card swipes.
Liability.
We've changed casino fights everywhere. That's it.
You know, the technology definitely is a little bit right before that smartphone era. Everyone's got
the Nokia, I think, right?
Yeah, stood out. Like, when the message came through that he won, it, like, takes a second to download, and it's the flip phone, and it's like, oh, yeah, this takes place a little bit in the past, not too far, but...
Even the first fight, the guy who works the front desk is filming it, and he's like, it's, like, odd. He's the only one who is doing that.
Yeah.
And you think about now, everybody filming that fight.
I agree.
I think he even almost has like a camcorder or something.
Yeah,
A flip phone with the camera that he's holding. Yeah. The camcorders, the military guys had the camcorder.
Yeah.
You know, they had those.
That's so true. That's true.
They had those.
Can we talk about him for 1 second? We didn't talk about our least favorite characters.
Okay.
The guy from the gym there, he's pulling for Mad Dog in the fight. He's like, go get him, Mad Dog, go get him. Mad Dog gets knocked the hell out by Tommy. And then he's cheering for Tommy in the finals. He's like, get out of here, dude. Like, you were already against me in the semis. I don't need you in my corner. I couldn't stand him.
He's just a weasel, right? He's the weasel who works the front desk at the gym.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I don't need you.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I can't relate to that guy. I don't want to be that guy.
Nah.
We don't do that.
We're getting him fired. Like, no more movies for him. Right?
But it's true. That was Tommy's, like, only underdog moment. Was, like, 30 seconds in the beginning of the movie.
When he first came in the gym.
Before he beats up Mad Dog Grimes. And from then on, this is a deep cut, but there's a film reviewer I love. I got to plug him. His name's Outlaw Vern. I've been reading his blog for 20 years, I think. He's an awesome movie reviewer. He does a lot of like He brings the respect back for like straight to video action movies. Okay. He's like, you know, people make fun of these Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, but they're actually kind of great. There's a movie called Blood and Bone with Michael Jai White. You're both looking.
I love that guy.
Where
no,
am I
like,
going
I
like with him.
No, yeah. I haven't seen that movie, but yeah, he Michael Jai White's in a lot of those like kind of low budget.
Well, he was fighting. He was in the original Spawn movie too.
Yeah,
that was him,
and he's prolific.
He's a fighter.
Prolific he's fight awesome. Movie actor. And in that movie, he's an unusual type of character, which is he just wins every fight he's in, no question. Like, he never struggles. He's just like – he's like a shark. He just, like, runs through everyone. And I think that Tommy is that too.
Yeah.
And you don't often see that in a movie where Tommy only struggles because he gets his arm broken and he's still going to fight. Right. So I think just as a, like, Easter egg, I think that's a hard type of – fight skill level to pull off as a story is a fighter who just wins every fight immediately.
Yeah. Before the final fight, he spends what, like 40 seconds in the cage in his first three fights. He just knocks the guy out and goes
the first
back
guy
to
he knocks
room.
Out, he doesn't even check. He just leaves.
Yeah. All of them. He just ducks right out. Yeah.
He's not like, are you down? He's just like, he's done.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because like the way they format the tournament, like they got to fight four fights in 2 days. Brendan is getting whooped on and pulls it out of the fire every time
every
at the
fight,
end.
Right.
Tommy just knocks a guy out and barely breaks a sweat.
Yeah.
And then they got to fight each other. And like Tommy, I guess maybe he kind of punches himself out. He comes right at Brendan.
He's got cuts under his eyes. His ribs are all cut up.
Yeah, Joel Edgerton's a handsome dude, but you never know it from this movie because his face is just lumped up the entire time.
So that's a plug for Blood and Bone. Very good movie.
I'm going to go check it out.
And for Outlaw Vern, who's an awesome, amazing film critic.
Nice.
But so the last thing I had that kind of aged poorly was taxis outside of Atlantic City.
Like you,
you probably wouldn't
think
see
about
that as much. I mean, you got more Ubers now. Not that it affected the movie in any single way, but it's just something I noticed.
But yeah, it helps place you like when it took place.
Yeah.
That is interesting to see after the fact.
To stay on the same subject of cars, I mean, Nolte's got the cassette deck. You know,
that's an old school looking Walkman.
Yeah. Well, even in the car, that's the Moby Dick as a tape, right? Same idea.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where you'd find like a little cassette of Moby Dick at this point.
I don't even have a DVD. I don't have a CD player in my truck at all. Like, they just don't even put them anymore, you know? So, I mean, here we are 10, 12 years later, and you can't even get that.
Yeah.
And I do miss cassette tapes. Like, I shouldn't.
Absolutely. But no, the physical element of it.
Yeah.
And it's good in a movie, too. I thought of this earlier, but when Tom Hardy forgives his dad, he takes off his headphones and the Walkman, and he stops the tape.
Yeah,
and I think
that's
you could argue that's very symbolic that he doesn't just take it off and
he knows how
it.
Much it means to him.
He stops it like you don't need to listen to the story
that's
anymore.
Interesting. Right? I didn't even notice that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so that again, you get that physical, the weight of a Walkman, right? We all remember that.
Yeah.
And the ka-chunk of turning the hit and the stop. And yeah, I agree. I think with all our digital and our streaming and everything, there's something that I miss about that.
Even
though that technology was terrible in comparison, right? But there was something very nostalgic about it.
Yep. Before the iPod, you know, maybe they couldn't afford it in the budget, so they were like, "Wow, I got this Walkman and I pulled from my basement."
I mean, do you remember when the iPod came out, and we all thought that concept was so absurd?
Yeah,
because you could put 12 songs on a CD, right, or 12 songs on a
tape. Something like
that.
That
was it. And they're like, "What if we put all of the songs in the world on?"
But at the beginning, it was like, this thing can hold 100 songs. Like,
yeah.
And that was amazing to us. And now it's like, it's
awesome. Listen, I think we've covered a whole bunch of shit on this movie. If we miss anything?
I think we covered it pretty good. It's an awesome movie. I hope we did it justice.
I hope so, too. Well, listen, I really appreciate you guys coming on the show. This was so much fun. I'm going to have more fun editing this down to a respectable time frame.
and thank you for doing that, Mark, because part of me was like, I wonder if we're going to do a podcast the length of the movie Warrior. You know, what if we're going to do a 2 hour, 20 minute podcast?
Yeah, we got close.
So,
but you know, I
really enjoyed talking about this with you guys.
I do too. This was awesome. So what I'll do is I'm going to put, you know, your guys' information in the show description as I always do. So if people want to find out more about you guys individually and what you guys got coming up, we'll definitely do that. You know, I don't think this will be the last movie that we do together, but
yeah, hope
you know,
not.
The next movies we'll do will be on the spinoff in the podcast universe, if you will. It's called The Double Take. So that'd be mostly me and Terrence, but like I said, I'm I think you passed your audition today.
Oh, Colin, my gosh. Oh, the pressure is. Well, I've been living out my own warrior story plot over here of like, am I passing the levels? Am I?
I'm just hoping Mark keeps me and doesn't just straight up replace me with you.
So I'm going to put you guys fight to the death. The winner's the co-host.
I'm sorry, right. Colin. I love you. Yeah.
You were a 1-0 fighter. I should have never messed with you.
I'm only here because it's my equipment.
I'm sorry I bought you.
You know, I'm only here because it's my equipment.
That's true. You're the hedge fund billionaire situation. Right.
But yeah, this is great. If you guys excuse me, I'm going to go home and drink and listen to Moby Dick now. So
yeah, on a Walkman, I hope.
Nice. Well, again, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You know, if you stuck around this long anyway, you might have had to watch this or listen to this show in a couple different parts. But we appreciate it, and hopefully that you enjoy the movie as much as we all do, and you went back through, watched it again, and you noticed some of the points that we made, and if you have more that we missed, by all means, you know, shoot me a note, and if we need to do...
Just come to Mark's house. He's here.
Yeah, show up, please. Yeah. Dude, that's always fun.